Pues.
Good evening, welcome along. It's Midweek Motorsport, just after 8 o'clock. I'm John Hindhoff, and joining me in the dining room this evening at Wellingborough is F1 correspondent Nick Damon.
Thank you, John.
In London, at Globecast Towers, in the nuclear bunker that is our control room, is Tim Greer.
Good evening, John. You're sounding very stern tonight.
Yes, well, there'll be no messing about tonight. It's all going to run on time and perfectly well. So that means there'll be no time for Declan from Worcester, Massachusetts. Okay, Dex?
Anybody want to reduce Spag Oreo? They're really delicious. I'm having one now.
I've got a Spag Bowl later.
Yes, I've just been cooking. On a packed... you can't keep pasta waiting. So, on a packed programme tonight, Tim, we have...
Your pass is going to taste horrible in 2 hours' time.
Throw it against the wall, and if it sticks, it's done.
We don't want to hear how you get your girlfriend.
Stop it.
Oh, my goodness.
Moving on.
Are we allowed to say that on the radio?
I'm married, by the way, so...
Probably not. Carry on.
What have we got on tonight's show, John?
Has thrown you.
We've got
all our usual features. We've got the news. We've got the American news. We've got Spanish news. Here on the Oval... your letters.
Oh, yes, we've got some good letters this week as well. Mostly from last week. And apologies to all of you on the...
last week.
Well, no, apologies to all of those of you who tried to listen this time last week and couldn't. Unfortunately, it was, as we say in the business, circumstances beyond our control that meant that the internet wasn't working at all for anybody ever.
Elton John would have liked that.
Really?
Yes.
What, the internet not working?
Yes, he wants to shut down the internet for 5 years.
It's got anything to do with the motor racing at all?
It's to do with the internet. He thinks it would be a good idea to close down the internet for 5 years, just as a social experiment to see how we'd cope without it.
Yeah, not going to happen, Elton. Or Reg. Reg Dwight, as his real name is.
But where would he buy his new wigs from?
Stop it.
Shops?
Now... Later on this evening, in a packed programme, we will be hoping.
Oh, sorry, I had that closed.
Thank you. We'll be hoping to reveal to you the identity of a brand new touring car driver who'll be making his debut later on in the year. Can't promise that because I'm not sure we're allowed to talk about it, but we might be if we can get the guests on the show. We'll be previewing this weekend's action at Brands Hatch, as well as speaking to all of our usual correspondents who are around. But before all that, Tim...
Bit of music for you, Mr. Hindhoff.
Ah, now I recognise that. I'm doing a bit of headbanging here, mate. This is all down to Champ Car, isn't it?
David Lee Roth at his best there.
Yes, indeed. What, not doing anything? Not singing?
Not since 1984. Last week on the show, we had Robert Doornbos as part of our countdown to Champ Car in Europe. He, of course, is a Dutch driver because they're going to Assen, Holland. This week, a Belgian driver, because they're racing at Zolder in Belgium. Say hello to Jan Halen.
Hello.
Now, and welcome to Europe as well, of course, because we're looking forward to a couple of Champ Car races in Belgium and Holland coming up. Are you excited about that?
Yeah, that's right. We just, affluent this morning. So, you know, it's nice to, you know, to come home to your homeland again and, you know, to do a race here in Zolder. That's, you know, that's fantastic. You know, I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, also the race in Assen, I think it's going to be really nice.
No stranger, of course, to racing in Europe before you went to the States. In fact, you're no stranger to the United Kingdom either. You competed in Formula Ford over here. And in fact, you won the Formula Ford Festival, didn't you?
Yeah, I lived in England for about 2.5 years, and you know, the 2 years of Formula Ford, did it with the factory team with Van Diemen in the second year, and we ended up winning the festival. So you know, that was good memories to England.
That was 2002, and you were second in the championship that year. Who were you racing against then, Jan? Who were the main competitors?
People like Danica Patrick, Patrick Long, Wesley Barber, Ronnie Bremer. You know, all people that are now, well up into motor racing as well.
Was Anthony Davison in that year, or was he the year before?
He was in the year that I came in. So he was in Formula Ford in 2001. And then he was, you know, he was with the factory team then. I was with the private team. And I moved up to the factory team the year after. So the first year I did was with Anthony Davison.
Now, you continued your career in Europe, going up through what would, I suppose you'd say, was a fairly normal route up to Formula 3 and, in fact, 3,000 races as well. And then you diversified a bit in 2005. You went to do the Renault Mégane Euro Cup and, in fact, won it, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right. I think, like you say, a pretty normal career. You know, started in go-karts where Jenson Button was one of my teammates, actually. And then, Formula 4, Formula 3, 3000. And then, made a bit of a sidestep to the Mégane. Ended up winning the European Championship. And that allowed me to make my move to America.
What was the thinking behind that at the time when you went over a couple of years ago, Jan?
I wanted to do it for a long time, but it's like everything, you know. You need to be at the, right place at the right time, and I never really had the opportunity to do it. So that's why, I made a bit of a sidestep in 2005 to the Mégane, and that allowed me to prepare the next season in Templar.
And you're racing with Conquest Racing this year. How's it been for you? I seem to remember you getting a car landing on top of you early on in the season. That must have been a bit of a shock for you.
Yeah, we had a couple of those early on in the season. But, I'm hoping our luck has changed. And the last couple of races, we've been doing really well. So, hopefully we can go for a podium finish here in Zolder.
You don't have a teammate at Conquest. Effectively, you're racing on your own. Does that make life a little bit more difficult?
Yeah, certainly. And also, we missed, I missed the first two races of the season. So we went into the season with no testing, and then not having a teammate on top of that makes it very difficult. You know, we're certainly, we had to catch up with the other teams, and we still are. We're still learning every day, and. Again, we're getting better and better every time we go out in the car, I hope we're well prepared for this race in Zolder.
And a brand new car this year as well, which again is something that everyone's having to get used to, and only having one driver in the team. That again, it must be a little bit of a disadvantage for you.
Yeah, the thing is, with the one car team, the problem is that we've got no data to look at, but mine. So. Having a teammate and having a good teammate is very important. And, we're missing that. On the other hand, all the attention's on my car. So, all the boys, the team, they really work very hard. And, they're doing an excellent job.
How did you enjoy Elkhart Lake, the last race, longest track on the schedule at just over 4 miles around? And I was there for the American Le Mans series at the weekend, watched you guys practicing. It's something else, that circuit, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very different from all the other tracks we go to in Champ Car. Every year, I think all the drivers look, as good as all the street courses are. I think everybody always looks forward to go to Road America and do a one-off race there on a big track. I certainly I enjoyed it. We came away with a good result. We had a good weekend.
Let's go back to Zolder, a circuit that I'm sure you're familiar with. What's your past experiences been like there for you? Is it a lucky track for you?
You can say that. We 2 years ago we won the 24 hours of Zolder there in the Corvette. So if only I could do that over. So good memories to Zolder, and more than that, I've been the ambassador for Zolder for the last maybe 3 or 4 years. So now to be able to come here to Belgium and to race in Zolder, that's special.
The track's changed recently, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. We changed the chicane down the back straight for the upcoming Temp Car race, just to slow us down a little bit over that little hill we've got after the chicane. So we made it a little slower, but at the same time We made it a lot easier on the drivers to overtake. So I think, you know, the whole change made the track a little better, I think.
Are you going to have an advantage there then, Jan, going into it, knowing the track as intimately as you do? This is probably the best chance you've got of being at a track that you know this year.
Well, I think not so much for the track. I mean, they're all, you know, in Champ Car, they're all professional drivers and, you know, they're all very talented. And I think, you know, every track we go to, you know, after the first session, you know, pretty much, you know, everybody pretty much knows how the track goes and everybody's up to speed. But I think, you know, having the fans there and just to know that you're there racing for your, you know, your own fans, that makes a difference. And I think I'll get an extra boost out of that.
And then it's on to Assen, following weekend, hardly any time to catch your breath there, almost a three-mile road circuit. What do you know about that? Again, you must have raced there before.
Never seen the place.
Really?
Yeah. So, never been to Assen, never seen the track. So.
Oh, it's a tremendous track.
Yeah, I hear from people. Yeah, I've seen a couple of MotoGP races on TV there. It looks like an awesome place, so. You know, I'm looking forward to that one too.
If we can just quickly talk about Belgium again, are you expecting a lot of home support? And as such, does that put any extra pressure on you?
A lot of home support, and I think it's good pressure. You know, to have all your people there, and you know everybody you know, it's just going to give me a good feeling, and you know, make it want me even more. So. You know, all good. The more people, the better.
Can you give us any idea about what your plans might be for next year? Are you looking to stay in Champ Car, move further afield? What's looking likely at the moment, Jan?
Well, like I said earlier, I really wanted to come to the States. I'm in Champ Car now. That's what that's what I really wanted to do. So, you know, I hope I'll be in the series for a couple more years. I really, you know, I enjoy doing it. I think it's. For me, it's definitely one of the best series I've ever been in. I look forward to doing it again next year.
Jan, thanks very much for joining us. I realise how busy you are at the moment, and I know how tight your schedule is. Thank you very much for taking some time out to have a chat with us this evening.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Globecast Radio. All the week's motorsport news. Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
Thanks very much to Tim and to Jan Halen there.
You nearly said Nick there. I haven't even introduced him yet.
Yeah, but he's here. He was here at the top of the show. He listened to Jan Halen and he's jumped back into his seat. And we have motorsport headlines now.
That's very
Tim,
good. Jan Halen, jump.
Yes, absolutely. Do you have any motorsport headlines for us? And if so, what do you have?
Williams test driver Naren Karthikeyan says Formula One or India is not ready to host a Formula One race.
No, it's not, is it?
In 2009.
What is his interview where I state the bleeding obvious? It's New Delhi, it's supposed to be, isn't it?
Yes.
And I don't think it's surprising anybody that it's another pie in the sky. Let's get set, sign an agreement with Bernie, get a provisional date, and then I'll actually be able to get round to building a circuit. So I can't say I'm particularly surprised about that. But did you see the other thing that Naren announced this week?
It's in the same interview with the Hindustan Times, yes. He says...
Which obviously delivers your doorstep every week, isn't it?
How do you manage to get that in SW13 or wherever it is?
I don't live in SW13, that's how it...
Where do you get it?
SE13. Karthikeyan, who's been with Williams in a test capacity for 2 years, says he's hoping to get behind the wheel as a race driver in 2008.
Yes. You know that statement, he's been with Williams in a test capacity, Tim?
Yes.
What sort of testing has he actually done the last 18 months?
Has he been to Lercy Levis to do some straight line?
He may have done some straight line. I mean, every single test has gone, which hasn't been done by the race drivers, which is most of them these days, because of course limited testing, has been done by Kazuki Nakajima.
Yes.
All that Naren's provided is a little sticker saying, Tata, and a couple of million quid.
Tata.
And I don't know where on earth he gets off on the fact that he has any chance of getting the race drive, because frankly, it isn't going to happen.
I've got a contract with Williams for next year, he said.
Yeah, it says, can we have your cash? Thanks. If we give us this much cash, we will let you sit in the car during launch day and be interviewed by the Indian press several times whilst you talk big about nothing. Don't forget, how long ago was it? 3 weeks ago, he reckoned he was going to get the Spyker drive for the rest of the season.
If it doesn't materialise, I've got a commitment with A1GP and would race in that.
Well, that's fair enough, I suppose, really. I mean, that's where he'll be then. So I look forward to seeing the race at A1GP next year.
What was Narain's best F1 performance?
We would have been at the Indianapolis race, yeah. But he was fourth.
He was fourth in Indianapolis, yes. Whereas
out of six, he beat two Minardi. He didn't manage to beat Wheel or No Wheels' famous Tiago Montero, though, who got his one and only, who got a podium.
Oh, sorry. Do we have to mention Tiago? He scored 5 points in his career to date, though, so... Yes, where did the other two come?
No, you get 5 points for fourth now, Tim, since the new points came out.
Of course you do,
out.
Yes. Yes, well, your best
you're
other finish
back
was 11th.
In 2002, Tim, you're so old school.
His best other finish was 11th in Belgium.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Moving on.
Just more news, do we?
Belgium, you mentioned Belgium. Does that mean we get Jan Heerlen again?
What could be the...
Can you hear this?
That's Aztec Camera's version of Jump, which is brilliant. I'm a very big Aztec Camera fan. Roddy Frame. So, is it kind of
it's different.
It's brilliant.
It's better than Girls Aloud.
I think I could probably play that.
I can play this.
Oh, that's
that
the
is
proper
better,
version.
Though. I mean, so it's got more kind of power, but the Aztec Camera version is very good.
The Tower of Power.
Super Roddy. He's a fantastic. I don't know.
Rock. Less
this
talk.
Obviously has nothing to do with motorsport, but he is the most talented guitarist I've ever seen.
Really?
He's fantastic.
Okay. You mentioned Belgium and Holland there, so carry on.
We mentioned that Williams drive. Who else might it go to?
Well, interestingly, the rumour I picked up today, which I think isn't too bad, and actually comes off the back of the fact that I didn't actually know. Do you know that Williams gave Vittorio Liuzzi his first ever drive of an F1 car?
I do.
And obviously with the announcement that Sebastian Bourdais will be the second Scuderia... You do it, Tim.
Scuderia Toro Rosso.
Driver.
Scuderia Toro Rosso.
For a double Seb team with Sebastian Vettel. It means that Vittorio Antoni is looking for a drive, and obviously he's been treated appallingly by STR. And interesting, well, it came out, he was surprised, I think he said during his chats with other teams, he was surprised how well he was regarded by them.
When we approached other teams, we realised that Tonio's reputation was better everywhere than within STR, said Peter Collins.
I mean, quite frankly, the STR situation is a farce. They've not supported
their drivers, haven't they, rather than managed them.
From this time last year, they were showing no confidence in them, and all right, we kind of agree with them about Scott Speed, but Tonio Liuzzi is a quality driver who's been given no backing. You have to nurture drivers. You can't just, you know, the car had problems. You can't then go, oh, it's a driver. When Tony has done good things, he's just been completely ignored. So, it does seem that, you know, the possibility, he's talking to two teams. I assume the teams he's talking to are Williams and Toyota, I would guess, as teams where you get paid and there's a good chance. Toyota looked like a good bet until, obviously, Ralf Schumacher woke up last weekend at Hungary, so they put in decent performance. He does that a couple more times, given Toyota's complete lack of sense, they may even re-sign him. I reckon a Rosberg and Liuzzi partnership at Williams would be pretty potent, and it's certainly what they need, a dynamic partnership to move them forward back, you know, like back into the top four teams.
First GP2 champion with the last Formula 3000 champion.
See, that must be just turning
bliss for you, mate.
Bliss. Formula 2, the Division 2 motorsport man has his ultimate combination. And perhaps as a test driver, Adam Carroll, because there's another person obviously who could get, he's doing so well in.
We'll be mentioning him later on.
Oh, sorry, have I jumped?
You might as well
jump.
Well, I mean, no, Adam Carroll. I mean, the other thing about Adam, I think I'm obviously jumping a story here, is a chance that it's now rumoured.
Jumping a story, you're jumping about an hour and a half at the moment.
But it's a chance that he might actually get the A1GP drive, mention him again, for Ireland this year, which I think would be a great idea. Because what Adam has proven is he's proven a couple of things. One, he is a great talent, and we've only seen him really doing testing for BAR, which is hard to tell what's going on. And secondly, he has proved that Antonio Pizzoni is completely rubbish.
The next episode in the Formula One spy scandal is set for September 30th. Now, if I'd known that this was going to run and run and run like this, I'd have got us some F1 spy scandal music.
We couldn't have done Mission Impossible.
I was thinking more along the lines of Paul McCartney and Wings.
What, Live and Let Die?
Spies Like Us.
Oh, dear.
That could be,
From the...
I think Mission Impossible, because it's impossible to work out why on earth they've decided to let this go to appeal. I think I even stated on this programme 3 weeks ago it couldn't go to appeal.
You did, in fairness.
And then Max turns around and goes, nah, I'll tell you what, we'll have an appeal. And it's ridiculous. It's that McLaren have nothing to answer. A Ferrari employee, we don't know it was Nigel Stepney, it could be anybody, it could have been a subterfuge, has decided to send some documents to a McLaren employee's home. McLaren employee did not take them into McLaren building, but copied them for himself for use at Honda. Okay, what has McLaren done wrong?
On another note, McLaren will also appeal the Hungarian Grand Prix steward's decision to remove its right to score Constructors' Championship points.
Two blooming right. How ridiculous. Sorry, I've got a soapbox up there, girlfriend. I'll jump off my soapbox.
He's slammed my table, he has.
But that was ridiculous. But how can you have, I mean, where one driver decides to stay in the pit box and block another driver, how can you take points off the team?
Yes.
I mean, when Michael Schumacher parked the car at Ras Kass in Monaco last year, he was put to the back of the grid. Did they take any points off Ferrari? No, they didn't.
If McLaren...
That's because of Ferrari, though.
Yeah,
if that's McLaren
correct.
Hadn't lost those points, they'd be...
I got the theme, James Bond. Very good. Someone's on iTunes.
There'd be 34 points clear rather than 19. This is not the original. I need the PRS details of this immediately. The ongoing spy scandal is good for the sport, though, according to Mark Sierra, a Swiss veteran of 87 Grand Prix in the 80s, says anything that rouses interest in Formula 1 should be welcomed.
I think he's absolutely right. I think I've seen the purists. They've been going, oh, no, 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 it's bad to have these scandals. No, it's moved.
I want to go to this hearing. I want to see Jean Todt at one end of the room.
You have to look down.
Right. Standing on the table. And Ron at the other end of the room. Right. And a laser going up the middle. Right.
Expect me to talk.
Do you expect me to confess, Mr. Todd? No, I expect you to be thrown out.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I mean, ridiculous as that sounds, it's not far off the truth. It's just a pointless PR exercise.
The hearing will be open to the press, though.
Good.
September the 13th. Which
but it is great.
Referencing
back, it is absolutely brilliant for Formula 1 because it's getting the whole sport onto a completely different page of newspapers and TV than you ever see it but normally.
This is the Dr. No theme.
Yeah.
Right. Is it?
And this is the John Barry Orchestra, so it's not a problem for your PRS.
I'll tell you what I like. I like the theme from Rush with Love, sung by
Matt Munro.
I
think you'll find.
He's fantastic.
I'll get rid of Mark Sewer's story. We'll move on to 1980 world champion Alan Jones.
Good night,
got any music for him?
Who's refused to...
Oh, wait a minute. Just hang on
no
a minute.
No stereotypes here, obviously.
I just put in Rolf Harris.
Has refused to condemn McLaren's driver lineup for becoming embroiled in a bitter spat as they battle for the 2007
title. Why should he condemn it?
The 60-year-old Australian, who similarly clashed with his Williams teammate Carlos Reutemann 3 decades ago, said he enjoyed the on-track incidents and verbal battles waged at the recent Hungarian Grand Prix. I loved it, Jones told the Observer newspaper, albeit advising he's Jones. Jones.
Yeah, yeah. It's Jones the driver.
The only thing that surprised me about Alonso's tactics was that he didn't pretend to stall the car, he said.
Well, that's a good idea.
That was a very good idea.
Yeah, I mean, given the fact that he didn't really clash with Carlos Reutemann, they didn't like each other very much, they were particularly unimpressed when Reutemann didn't move over as asked for him, I think at the Argentinian Grand Prix in 81, but beyond that, or 82 actually, beyond that, I think it was a much more normal relationship in those days between the drivers. There was quite a lot more independence between the two drivers back in the 70s and 80s. But, you know, it's been a succession of world champions and pundits crawling out of the woodwork the last couple of weeks, isn't it, to make their comments on things.
Mm.
I mean, rent a quote from Nigel and Damon and John Surtees and that sort of thing.
And, of course, you.
Yeah, me. But I'm not a world champion.
And Jordy Scheckter.
I'm quoting merely from the sidelines as a lay... Not to belittle myself, obviously. As a lay interviewer.
A lay.
A story we covered over a year ago...
Right.
Regarded the new standardised ECU that's going to be introduced
by Microsoft.
It's the Microsoft one, yes. All the cars will crash.
That's right. Yes.
We did that joke over a year ago as well.
It's still funny a year on.
Three-fingered salute. All of that.
But of course, it's not just a Microsoft project. It's a McLaren Electronic Systems.
ECU. Are they by any chance related to McLaren? F1?
They're completely separate from Ron and Dennis's F1 team.
Of course they are.
Where are they based?
Said who? Who said that?
Instead of MES spokesman. That's what, McLaren Electronics
Systems. Don Rennis.
Where are they based?
Nod.
They're based Nod in Woking, to answer your...
Woking?
Where are McLaren based?
Sort of Woking way.
Woking, I think.
Right. Are they in the same building by any chance?
I bet they're in the old building.
Hmm.
I know, I went past the old building and it seems to be for sale.
What's it called?
What, not to ProDrive?
McLaren Electronic Systems.
Mm. So anyway,
cars in the car.
So have they actually now built that piece of ECU and is it working brilliantly?
It's been tested by several teams.
Has it?
Yes, according to the German specialist technical publication Auto Motor und Sport, which is...
Oh, hang
really
on a second. Stop.
It's all technical.
Stop. Right?
Stop.
It's not ready. Stop. It's not ready. McLaren Electronics on their site.com. Mm-hmm. Our parent is the McLaren Group. This UK group employs close to 1,000 people. Our major activities include McLaren Racing, brackets, the Formula One racing team, close brackets, McLaren Cars, the high performance road car manufacturers, close brackets, and McLaren Electronics Systems. It's one of three parts of the McLaren Group.
Don't forget the other one. Absolute Taste.
It doesn't mention that on there.
Well, that's because they're a catering firm run by Lisa, as a kind of a sideline job, so we're getting bored. Because no one bought our books.
Oh, books are really good. I've got
none of the Mac and Lauren books. They're really, really good. I like them.
I got them for
series.
Some. They're very good.
I liked them.
That's Martin Haven's little boy.
I just read them myself.
The teams have been testing have been Renault, Ferrari, Honda and BMW.
Let me guess, they've moaned.
They're not happy about the idea of using the unit for the next 3 years. It's been suggested that they're uncomfortable with the idea of forcibly working closely, including exchanging data, with a team that's accused of industrial espionage.
Oh, goodness. Oh, sake. I've let that music go now. You should have told me I could have got that back again.
Well, we did this in rehearsals, John.
Looping the whole thing together.
Rehearsal. That would give people an idea that we planned this.
A spokesman for McLaren said, MES acts independently of the team. An FIA source said, the teams always oppose something that's new.
Apparently, McLaren Electronic Systems make electronic control systems for motorsport. We've been supplying control and data acquisition systems to the motorsport industry for over 15 years.
Ooh.
Selling to teams and engine makers in Formula One, World Rally Car, IRL, MotoGP, NASCAR, Le Mans and other professional motorsport categories.
Staying with McLaren, it may have come to your attention over the last week or so that there have been some stories in some of the tabloid newspapers about McLaren driver Lewis Hamilton,
who's been
pictured with
frolicking
in the sea on the beach and having dinner with a mystery brunette.
He's frolicking innocent, or is frolicking sexual? Well,
it looked pretty innocent in the photo in the Evening Standard last Thursday.
Hang on, there's a lady. Let's ask
the
lady.
Is it right on the cusp?
What's frolicking? Is it innocent or sexual?
Hang on.
I think you'll find that's right on the cusp.
on the cusp of what? You can't leave us hanging like that.
No, on the cusp of pregnancy, I don't know.
That's the point. Is it beyond petting?
But before heavy petting?
It's before petting. Okay.
So what's it after?
It's only frolicking.
Is it after
It's
dating?
After meeting for the first time, I'd
it's
have thought.
It's after being friends.
It's between friends and petting. Okay. There we go. On the scale, that's
so
frolicking.
So it's like John and Nick.
Yes,
they're
that's
more
right.
than just friends.
Wait, do we frolic
in the sea?
I would never frolic in the sea. It's too damn cold to frolic. We're frolicking in a pit lane. How about that? So who's he frolicking with? Because I think I know the answer to this question, because it came out today and was rather interesting.
It's Sarah OJ.
How are you spelling Sarah?
S-A-R-A. How else would you spell Sarah?
With an H.
Are we spelling OJ in a very similar way to Mansell OJ, owner of, a quarter or 15% of McLaren?
15% of Woking-based McLaren.
Gosh!
Yes. She is the daughter of the multimillionaire.
And she's 18-year-old, and apparently
it was in the Evening Standard yesterday.
It was in the Evening Standard last Thursday.
What you got to say is it's a pretty good tactic, isn't it? You get yourself really into the team. It's the old-fashioned way, isn't it? You get in by relations. I mean, let's be honest, it's how several of the people in the Spyker got their drives at the moment, because they're related to someone.
It's all quite innocent. It's just that Lewis is staying on her yacht.
She's got a yacht?
Well, it's her dad's.
Oh, fair enough. It's the same thing when you're a multimillionaire. Yeah. You do wonder, because he's basically one-upped at Lonzo again. So what's Fernando going to do? Is Fernando going to go around and have a quick affair with Lisa Dennis just to get him back? So he's equally ingrained in the team. I don't know.
Paddy Lowe.
Who's him?
McLaren's Director of Engineering.
Pat Simmons.
The Director of Engineering at Renault.
Rory Byrne.
The Consultant Technical Director at Ferrari.
Jean-Claude Migeaud.
A world and aerodynamicist.
Have all formed a little forum.
I know. They've formed the... Is it called the Overtaking Club?
It's called the Overtaking Working Group, but it might as well be called the Overtaking Club.
Yeah, I mean...
Basically, these four people who've spent the last 20 years working on ways to stop people overtaking their Formula One cars are now putting their heads together to find a way of letting people overtake
their
Formula One cars.
Sounds like poacher and gamekeeper to me. But yeah, I mean, it's quite a good idea. They're working on two areas, I believe. I think the original idea was...
Hang on, they're holding hands!
Oh, wait, let's have a look.
I'm sorry, going back to a previous story.
Paddy Lowe and Pat Simmons holding hands.
No,
she's tall, isn't she? She's tall, isn't it?
She's standing up there.
Can you go back up again?
She's standing on the balls of her hands. Feet.
That was holding hands a minute before that
was
taken.
Do you know what? A, he's got a really nice watch, and B, he's got a really nice girlfriend.
She's actually quite a lot close to the camera, actually.
She's...
Very
apparently easy. He likes people called Sarah because he was frolicking with Sarah from Girls Aloud as well at the party.
Let's be honest, these days he's a multimillionaire sports personality, the number one personality in this country. He's going to be able to frolic with any woman he wants. Lucky little leader.
Do you think that she lost her mobile phone at the party and he found it for her?
Can we get back to...
I don't think you need to. I'm just naming what... She's actually really quite tasty. But
I'm
going to
switch them off while we talk about flaps, chimneys, winglets and barge boards for 2010.
No, but it's a very good point. What they're trying to do is they had two ideas. The first idea was to make it easier to follow a car. And the second idea was actually to make it easier for a car to overtake by using the aerodynamics of that car. Making it easier to overtake they found to be too difficult. So what they're
I'm getting the skinny on Sarah OJ here. Ooh. Apparently, a friend, no frolicking yet, with Jude Law.
As much as
that is possible with Jude Law.
Trust his nanny, then, because that's not very friendly. So basically what they decided to do is they tried to work on a way in making the car in front of an aerodynamic disadvantage. I'm keeping going.
Meanwhile...
An aerodynamic disadvantage the car's following.
Inconsolable. Okay.
So what that basically means is that, much like IRL did a couple of years ago, they're looking at working on a rear wing that will produce more... an airflow that's more conducive to following it without wiping out the front end. And I believed him. There's some very awful muttering. I'm sorry, but there's been a husband and wife conversation there, and I don't want to be... I think it could be a bit crude. Professional.
Apparently, Felix Dennis, in his book, which is called How to Get Rich, right, Felix Dennis, as of Dennis Publication, said, look, it's like this. People with lots of money just get more sex. Deal with it.
Now, two aerodynamicists who aren't involved in the overtaking working group are Loic Bijois and John Owen.
That's because they've gone to go and work for Honda.
Yes, having left Williams and BMW respectively.
They're not needed.
And the reason for that is that Rubens Barrichello says they have an incompetent wind tunnel.
Hang on, how can you have an incompetent wind tunnel?
He's blaming an inanimate object.
Well, it's certainly not his fault, is it?
Or the aerodynamicists, or the management, or Nick Fryer. So Nick Fryer is going to fire his wind tunnel for being incompetent.
Barrichello's met the two new aerodynamicists.
Has he met wind tunnels?
And said, I heard from them exactly what I expected to. They believe that our wind tunnel's calibration is wrong, and because of that, everything that we've developed has been ineffective. We'll have to change many things, even parts of the structure inside the tunnel. It'll be about a month until we're able to see some changes.
Yes, exactly.
So John has just showed me a selection of Sarah OJ, and all right, there's a couple of poor ones eating ice creams. There's one with her with Jude Law, which is very much like a snap saying, "Look at me, I'm with Jude Law." And there's a really nice black and white one of
That's
her,
nice,
which
isn't it,
with you can see it panning down to her, showing a nice watch there, can't you? You can see with the tag watch on.
Yeah.
It will be. She's. And there's Lewis. You know, that one said there's Lewis with his Hong Kong girlfriend, who apparently is his ex now, according to...
When we did this Dear Listener in rehearsals, it took us 45 minutes and they didn't even start talking about Hamilton's ex-girlfriends or their watches.
Well, I haven't seen the current squeeze, and quite frankly, she's really rather attractive. And being a man beyond my prime, it just makes me think,
have to drop all of the remaining features in this programme, it's not my fault.
No, it's the fault of Lewis Hamilton for frolicking. Two middle-aged men wanting to know what the definition of frolicking is and then finding out.
And last Thursday's Evening Standard for publishing the photo.
And E for finding it on the internet.
One of the 2007 Formula One season's biggest surprises, Super Gurry, looking for a new partner to bring the team a much-needed cash injection.
No, they've been kind of very unlucky because their shipping firm hasn't actually transferred any money to them recently.
That would be SS United, who haven't shipped any money in the direction of...
They haven't, no.
What, have they gone down with the ship?
There's been a complete embargo on cash.
And by the way, for anybody who wants to know, apparently,
oh gosh,
Sarah Oche looks like a, what's the first word?
Tall.
Tall, sober Lindsay Lohan.
Excellent. Sober is a word that we couldn't use to describe you at the moment, John, is it?
No, I'm completely sober. Thank you very much.
I'd like to back that up. I've not drunk a drop.
You haven't, Nick.
No.
But I sometimes feel that you're sharing that sofa with Sarah Kennedy.
Oh, harsh. I never dyed me hair.
He's got a throat infection, if that's the case.
Spanish businessman Alejandro Aher is...
Sorry, you can't ever go at people pronouncing things badly and then go, Aher.
Alejandro Aher.
Who
recently bought Adrian Campos's GP2 team is now the man linked with buying Super Group.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very unfair because Super Group had a good season, but they've been let down by sponsors, and now Mr. Aguri is having to sell up some mistake.
What a strange first name for him.
Super. The other thing, did you notice that there was another really good piece of news I thought about Aguri this week? They actually stated that they were going to build their own car this year because the last thing they wanted was have to use this year's Honda.
Well, absolutely. Clearly, you wouldn't, would you? Can I just mention something else? Right, something else that Lewis Hamilton and I have in common. Barely tell us apart.
There's a shot of Lewis with a very powerful jet ski at speed, looking kind of svelte and exciting. And there's a picture of John hanging on for dear life.
That was my first time on a jet ski.
So, yeah, you have that in common.
And I've got a nice
there
watch
There has been
on.
A lot of criticism that Lewis has been jet skiing without any crash helmet or... anything like that.
No, he hasn't got a crash helmet on, which I don't think you need for jet skiing.
Well,
but he has got a life vest on.
And I'm
on
hoping that when he's with Sarah, he's got the right protection.
The government of Singapore announced that plans are being finalised to charge hotels at the street circuit an extra 20% tax. 11 hotels are located around the proposed street track, and they'll be charged for that lucrative privilege by their own government.
Well, hang on. These are hotels that were built like 60, 50, 40, 30 years ago, and the track isn't even operational yet.
That's the one, yes.
Even
so this would be like somebody charging... This would be like Gordon Brown, texture like son, charging people in Silverstone for living next to a racing track and making money out of renting their houses out.
Yep. Absolutely, yes.
I shouldn't have mentioned that, should I? Because now I'm going to get all of the good burgers of citizens of Silverstone on my case.
Well, you do realise officially that happen, because if you did rent out your house in Silverstone, you should actually declare it for tax.
Only if you earn more than $4,000 a year from it.
I'm sure they all do. It doesn't matter whether you make a profit on it or not.
Because the people who rent out their houses in Wimbledon Week have to do that as well. Not for the Grand Prix, obviously. We're going to beat this Wimbledon.
bit of a long way to go to Silverstone.
Wimbledon house out for the Grand Prix, obviously.
Well, it'd be cheaper though, wouldn't it? Than staying in Silverstone. And actually, it'd be quicker to get there. Sorry, go on.
You're just Singapore, but it's a good point there, because some of those hotels are going to have windows over at the track, but given the fact they're not like Monaco, where it's like nice little kind of two or three or four-story French places, these are like 90-story kind of skyscrapers. So even if you're overlooking the track on the 87th floor, all you're going to see is little tiny bricks, or you're not even seeing them, that's the drivers. It's little tiny ants, which you're not even going to be able to see anyway, because they'll be lit up.
The Ministry of Trade said in a statement some hotels are likely to benefit more from the event than others due to their proximity to the circuit, or because their rooms have a good view of the track.
Is that the Minister for stating the bleeding obvious?
The hotels are expected to be
Isn't that the point of having a Grand Prix? You actually gain some pull through on the tourism. Otherwise, what's the point of being there?
It's inward investment. It's all about inward investment.
I mean, this is the problem, isn't it? The Grand Prix are going to places now, and the amount of money the government will pay on the back of what they think the pull through revenue will be. And that is why, you know, the Grand Prix are all going to new states or places they're trying to prove, like Valencia. And, you know, Silverstone can't afford the actual race fee because they're just a racetrack who sells it to people rather than having a subsidy from the government who actually works out that it's worth $27 million to have people flying in, and then there's a PR for the country and that sort of stuff.
Perhaps Silverstone should build some hotels and charge people 20% tax to stay there. Globecast
Radio. All the week's motorsport news. Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
Ah, yes, It's the letters page here on Midweek Motorsport, studio at 0157.org. This is from Norman Chow in California. I was turned onto your show by a friend of mine and have to say that I find it addictive and always entertaining.
He's not a friend of Doug, is he?
Well, he needs to get some help for that.
I
clearly.
Like the idea of turning people on.
Yes. Generally
I like
speaking,
the fact that we're addictive.
Generally speaking, we can get treatment, I'm sure. Generally speaking, we have a lot of lack of motorsports enthusiasm in the United States, unless you count NASCAR and its fans, which I don't, he says. By the way, whatever happened to that fellow Doug Verner? I always look forward to his letters. I sometimes feel he has a personal vendetta against Mrs. Hospital. It's always good to hear that there is a greater motorsport fan than me in the state.
Now, you've now met Doug Verner.
I have
you?
Met Doug Verner. I met him at the weekend.
He was stalking you.
He wasn't.
He sent me an email saying, tell John that I'm standing.
He sent me one as well. And he came to the booth. I told him where the booth was. It was fine. This week...
He was escorted away by guards.
No, he's fine. He's got a... We need to get him on the show. I need a phone number for him, really.
You've met him and you didn't ask for his phone number.
I forgot. I was a bit busy at the weekend.
They just kissed. They didn't exchange numbers.
That's me. I want a couple of things that he's got. One of them, which is absolutely priceless. However, Robbie Gordon's fine... For swearing on TV. $35,000 must really have Robbie Gordon thinking twice about his actions. That's, it says, $10,000 more than saying crap on TV and $5,000 more than he probably carries in his wallet. I'm surprised they didn't dock him 25 points. He is, after all, only 2,973 points out of first place. That would have been equally meaningless. Oh, but wait, don't forget the probation. Of course, nothing ever comes to a driver on probation unless you're Thomas Enger. Or Paris Hilton. Very good. This is the best bit of the whole letter, though. This is akin to the Nixon tapes. This is the 10-second pause after the lollipop came up before Alonso left the pit.
Ooh.
Tremendous. We've never heard this. It was accidentally erased, apparently, by McLaren.
Really?
Yes.
People in Formula 1 are great at accidentally erasing tapes, aren't they, Nick?
Yeah.
I have heard that. Yes, occasionally.
Mark Slater.
Tapes, yeah.
Mark Slater and Fernando Alonso. Mark Slater is Fernando's race engineer. And so I'm going to have to play both parts here because Nick can't see the screen. 3, 2, 1, go! Go! Alonso says, wait, I have a question. Sorry, he's not German at all, is he? Wait, I have a question. And I didn't want to interrupt your countdown. So Mark says, what? Fernando, which tyres did you put on? What? Shouldn't we put the intermediates on? It might rain tomorrow, says Fernando. Mark says, are you loco? Go! Look, did you warm them up as Ferrari says we should on page 548? Mark says, if you don't leave now, you won't be able to get your lap in. Ah, Fernando says, perfecto. Give Lewis my best. Which I think is absolutely tremendous.
I love the bit of Ed mentioning it on page 548 of the Ferrari manual.
if it's on a CD-ROM, does it still have page numbers?
Probably.
If you watch it in page view, you get numbers.
Now, what he says also, which sort of follows what we've been seeing over the last few weeks, I think that McLaren should have reviewed the footage before laying out their arguments in front of the stewards. If anything, they've sullied their reputation over what seems to be a preposterous explanation. If that really was the way it was supposed to go, Ron Dennis wouldn't have been throwing his headset down at the end of Q3, and to appeal this mess seems a bit ambitious. They should let this one go. Besides, give up the points to Ferrari. Besides, it's not worth the whole season. They have to have some semblance of reputation left by the time they go before the FIA for something potentially far more serious, he says. Now, he said, I'm leaving IRL up to you, which is good, because we go on forever for IRL, don't we? I am just going to finish packing. This was he sent just before he disappeared to Dairy Country. He said, I'm watching...
Wisconsin?
Yes, exactly. This was last week.
Look at me.
He says, and this is quite... Dex, you'll appreciate this. I'm just going to finish packing while watching an X Games rerun of Motocross Freestyle. Somebody's just popped, and I quote, a half-calf, double-decaf, Indian Air seat, crab, can-can, pile-driving, netbuster with a lemon twist. Clearly, it has to be seen in slow motion to be fully appreciated, and it's also served at some fancier pubs.
The good thing about the fact that they have to show everything in slow motion on X Games is that they can actually fill a couple of hours of television with not very much racing.
That's very true.
Doug, you're a gentleman and a scholar. And if you want to bump Doug from pole position for next week's
letters page, which I'm sure he's working on even as we speak, studio@0157.org. Again, we apologise for not being on the internet last week. That was beyond our control.
In all fairness, he has set the bar very high, but the gauntlet has been thrown down.
Yeah, and he must be very close to getting a phone call. And if he puts his number on, I think we should have him on to do one live, Dex. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Can I just point out that listeners who did miss last week's show because of the internet...
The outage.
...problems...
internet outage.
The in-out, yes. Mm. As we could abbreviate it.
The outernet.
It was repeated twice much later on in the week, lunchtime on Friday and also sometime on Sunday.
Yeah, and it is now on the...
And it's now available as a Download On Demand podcast.
We're right up to date with the Download On Demand podcast for those other of you who have emailed in. Studio 0157.
Mr. Nick Damon, who missed the one while he was on holiday.
Yes. I know, which I can't download because it wasn't working this morning. We promise you're going to fix it.
It's on iTunes because I listened to it.
There you
27?
Go.
27?
Yes, 27. Oh, 27 is Dario's one, isn't it, bizarrely? Was his race number?
I don't know.
Studio@0157.org. More of your letters
this
next
week.
Week.
30. Are there no more letters?
No, that's
we just had the one.
Well, no, we had more, but most of them were about us being off last week, which is heartening that people missed us.
So were we on the Sky radio?
We are. We were on Sky. We were only on the off the internet. We were on the outernet. It was an outage-a-net. Studio@0157.org, and we could be reading your letter this time next week on Midweek Motorsport.
Bono Extended.
So here we are then with Spanish news on Midweek Motorsport. Tim Gray, ¿cómo estás?
I have no idea what you're saying. This week's Spanish news will be read by Declan Brennan.
Ah, Declan Brennan United Estado de Americanos. ¿Cómo estás?
Estados Unidos, or something like that. Buenos días, everybody, and we get straight ahead, and hold your horses, because here we go. Una discusión muy animada con los guardias del Bilonair, el local más exclusivo de la Costa Esmeralda en Cerdeña, Italia, y Bruce Willis, que termina de patitas en la calle. Estos son los únicos elementos claros de un suceso en el que se enfrentaron el actor y el magnate de la F1, Flavio Briatore, dueño del local. Existen dos versiones. Bruce, según la prensa amarilla estudiante, y cenaba con su amigo Jerry Weintraub, producer de Ocean's 13, y el boxeador ruso Vladimir Klitschko. La modelo es Elisabetta Gregorassi, novia de Briatore, quiso una foto con él y si él resistió. Enfadada, que querase a su novio, quien ordenó las guardias echar al artista. Otra versión. Briatore dijo que Willis se fue porque quiso del billionaire tras discutir con el servicio de seguridad que no le dejó entrar a una ala de la discoteca decidida a la fiesta privada de Libanez Fawaz Glossi. Esto en la Costa Esmeralda en verano.
Excellent.
That's pretty good news. I'm pleased about that. I'd like to add to my say, Doth the vapor, por favor.
Now, I can just say that...
Cuatro cerveza, por favor. Grande y frío.
We all know the story, because this is basically Bruce Willis and Jerry Weintraub being thrown out of Flavio's restaurant.
What's that got to do with motorsport?
Flavio?
What's that got to do with motorsport?
It's well, old Leatherface himself.
He's got nothing to do with motorsport.
Well...
Now, can I
he's going to buy QPR
quickly,
or Arsenal.
Can I quickly read this out as translated by Babelfish in English? This is brilliant.
Only the first few lines, because otherwise somebody will die before
right.
I get to the next
I'll
thing.
I'll do the first two lines.
Nick, though.
A discussion very animated with the guards of the billionaire, the most exclusive premises of the Coast Emerald in Sardinia, Italy, and brushes Willis that finishes up Petitus in the street. I love...
Which is funny, because the one thing Bruce doesn't need is a brush, given the fact that he's as bald as a coot.
Absolutely.
When I was sending a text the other day to Dario Franchitti, and my...
Did he get air miles for that?
I did, yes.
Predictive texting?
Predictive texting calls them either daring Franchitti, Or, what was that ding?
Something's crashed.
Or, oh, I can't remember what the other one
Bitario,
was.
He's crashed most of all.
It was daring or,
Easing. Eating. No, easing.
The phone's charging. Both of them were very appropriate.
Dashing?
Even Frank Kitty sounds like a porn movie, but that's another story.
Right.
Yes.
They were thrown out of Flav's restaurant, yes?
Yes.
Right.
In Spanish.
In Spanish.
They were probably thrown out in Italian, actually.
They would have been in Italian, but according to this, it was in Spanish. Ah.
And that's our Spanish news for this week.
Hurrah!
News from across the pond. If it happens over there, hear about it over here on Midweek Motorsport.
And Tim Greer has the American news headlines. Not here on the Oval, this is American news. What have you got, Tim?
Target Chip Ganassi Racing is mourning the loss of Travis Bickle, a member of the Grand-Am team, who also worked with IndyCar Series and Indy Pro Series teams. Bickle rejoined Ganassi's team earlier this year. Previously, he'd worked in the Indy Pro Series with Monon Racing. He began the 2007 season as part of Panther Racing's engineering staff. He died last week.
Monon was on the wall at the Chap Car race at the weekend.
Monon?
We know that.
Run Ensign.
So he certainly did.
How old is Mo now?
He's 172.
Because he was knocking... I remember seeing him first, unfortunately, in difficult circumstances. It was after the crash that Claire Grazzoni had at Long Beach. That's the first time he came to my attention. Was it 78, 77?
The first time he came to my attention was...
It was 80, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 1980. First time he came to my attention was when I asked him, I had to ask him to get out of the way so I could get David Kennedy's autograph when Kennedy was doing a demonstration lap at the Phoenix Park in an Ensign.
Wow.
Fantastic.
AT&T may have to peel off its decals from Jeff Burton's car for this weekend's race.
Why?
After the court decision overruled the previous court decision that allowed them to change the branding on their car.
That'll be Nextel then, not being very happy about it.
The US 11th Circuit Court of Appeals ruled against a temporary injunction issued by a district court judge in Georgia in May that gave AT&T the immediate right to change its logos and brand marks on the number 31 car competing in the Nextel Cup from singular to AT&T.
Code 13 will change it back again.
But you know what? This is absolutely ridiculous because the Ferrari of all of this has brought more attention to it than if NASCAR had just shut up and let them do it.
Richard Childress Racing's number 31 car, driven by Jeff Burton, has run the AT&T logo since the All-Star Challenge, following the completion of AT&T's acquisition of Bell South last December.
Singular is now
wholly owned by AT&T, and the Singular brand is being transitioned to AT&T.
Wasn't there a precedent that when Sprint were taken over AT&T or vice versa, and there was a logo change?
No, this is the one that's caused the most Ferrari. This is because Sprint have just bought Nextel. Don't forget.
All right, it's wrong way around. So I knew that Nextel aren't going to be next anymore. They're going to be Sprint.
No, it's going to be the Sprint. It's going to be the Sprint championship next.
And
year.
Is that the problem? Because of course Sprint and AT&T are big rivals. Whereas Nextel wasn't really a rival AT&T because Nextel, I'm right in saying, is more of a mobile provider, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's also a case of there was also Singular.
They had an exclusivity.
Yeah, they were grandfathered. Singular were grandfathered in. So as much to Nextel's chagrin, there wasn't anything they could do about the Singular sponsorship. And basically, they used a loophole to say that once Singular became AT&T, they said, no, we're not having that because we grandfathered in Singular, but we didn't grandfather in AT&T. And you know the irony of all that? Is that Singular bought AT&T's mobile division to become Singular in the first place.
Oh, really?
And now AT&T have bought them back.
Oh, how funny.
I expect there's some very, very rich men living in the Hamptons who don't give a hoot about NASCAR racing, which is mainly supported by people in trailer parks.
Shouldn't this be here on the Ovals, guys?
No.
This is finance on the Ovals.
This is American
different.
News. It's nothing to do with racing.
Okay. So we're going to talk about Champ Car and IRL in this bit.
Milk for John.
But we can't talk about Champ Car because it's not Oval, strictly speaking, so...
Axe Toro Rosso racer Scott Speed will almost certainly switch to the NASCAR series in 2008.
Yeah, who's going to give him a drive?
No chance.
John, think about that question again and then answer it yourself.
Red Bull.
But no, it's not going to happen because, let's be honest, what happens about 18 times a lap in a NASCAR race?
He'll get overtaken.
People overtake. How often does Scott Speed overtake anybody? Once a year. It's not much of a... he's not really a good bet, is he?
No, I think what you have to do is you just have to make sure he always qualifies on pole.
I think it's much more likely that...
Is he not going to be in a Toyota?
I would think that Neil Yarley would be looking over his shoulder in Champ Car.
No, I unfortunately, I would love to be able to argue with you and say, yeah, that's going to happen. But I'm afraid Mr. Masterschitz has come out with some very disturbing comments.
That's a great pronunciation of the name, by the way.
His actual words were, Speed drove in Formula One against the world's best drivers. He's courageous and his and name fail. Is a marketer's dream. And with a cowboy hat, it's perhaps complete. He would be an asset for us in NASCAR.
Do you not feel that basing your driver selection on name and hat size is not really the best way of going about things? It might explain the complete turmoil of Red Bull's driver policy.
Well, you think if that was the case, Will Power would be racing for Red Bull as well, wouldn't he, if it was based on names?
Do you not think, therefore, that they ought to...
And obviously Bob Quick.
Well, no, you're a driver, right? Say you're Justin Smith, and you're in Omaha. If you change your name by Depol to effing fast, then, you know, off you go. hello, and look at my hat. It's lovely. Oh, I have some Red Bull money. Fantastic.
My name is Roger Leadfoot. there's Davey Overtaker, obviously, who's in the wings at the moment.
Conversely, if you wanted to hire a veteran driver, then possibly if you were choosing by name, you wouldn't want to go for someone called Rusty, would you?
No. Although, you know...
But Childress Racing do.
There is precedent to this. We'll get back to that in a second. But there is precedent to this, because don't forget Lake Speed for many years was running in air. And Lake Speed isn't obviously a lake, because the idea of entering a lake in a NASCAR race is rather ridiculous. It would have to be a very small
lake.
But
it's not ridiculous in a Sylvester Stallone film.
Can I just mention Dick Trickle, by the way?
Yes, which isn't a condition, as people...
Or Cole Trickle, who didn't exist.
No, but they used Dick Trickle's car.
Mm.
But Dick Trickle did exist, and he wasn't a condition. He was an actual driver.
And Buckshot Jones.
Oh, that's a great name.
Buckshot, yeah, but that's not his real name.
No, really? Oh, I can see him now at the font. What do you want to call him, Mr. Mitchell? Oh, Buckshot. Okay, off you go.
Anyway, no, can we get back to the really important point
about
this?
Scott Speed having a good name but no talent?
No, the fact is that if ever there was a slap in the face for single-seater racing in the United States, and something that probably is another sign of the apocalypse, is the fact that Scott Speed, whose true home should be helping prop up and support American drivers in single-seater racing, whether it be the IRL or Champ Car, is eschewing all of that. And his sponsors and owners, Red Bull, are issuing all of that to put him in a NASCAR team.
I can't see him qualifying.
Whilst they're still supporting the driver search program, which was sorted out at the weekend, and the new recipient of that is coming over to do Formula Palmer Winter Series.
So that,
you're absolutely right, funnily enough. So therefore, you have to wonder why they have a driver search program.
Well, yeah, especially as they've obviously promoted so many of their drivers to F1.
Oh, no, who was the winner of the driver search, John?
I don't know.
I believe it was Barry. Woo, look at me go!
No, it was Ian.
I believe Henry Hope Frost's entered the building.
Oh, hang on, he's lost his car.
Yeah, unfortunately, he was very lucky because Trevor's sudden and unexpected stop nearly beat him to the championship. But
and of course, Terry Brake Test got thrown out.
I think he's in the IRL, isn't he?
I don't know.
Do you want me to find out?
Larry Lousy overtaking, certainly in card.
Terry Brake Test is just the best name I've ever heard.
Terry Brake. He would have been. Do you remember that? Did anybody
he's
here?
He's from the Colchester Brake Test.
Did you? Did any of you here have the old game on the Commodore 64, the driving game? Revs was absolutely tremendous. Now all the names on there were great. And they were like Scott Speed.
Well, they couldn't overtake.
Skid Solo, yes. Mm. He was good.
Yes, and can you remember any of his, the people he raced against?
You see, if Bradley was here now, he'd be able to tell, because he was...
German Von Wagen was my favourite.
Move on, Tim, move on.
So anyway, that's we're just heralding the death of single-seater racing in the United States. Well done, Red Bull.
News from across the pond. If it happens over there, hear about it over here on Midweek Motorsport.
The Globecast Radio Channel, home of live sports coverage, where it just keeps on coming.
My, the first hour's just flown by, hasn't it? It just seems like a moment.
You wouldn't believe that we still had another hour of this show to do, would you, John?
Do you know what? I'm effervescent with excitement. I'm bubbling. I really am.
Bit of bad news, guys. I think the lawyers are on the phone already.
Tim, in the second packed hour, we have what?
We have some more news coming up.
Right. I can't wait. Will it be as much celebrity gossip? Well, not quite as much. You're going to try and stop us talking about the celebrities, aren't you?
No more celebrity gossip.
Okay.
We've got some more Declan Brennan.
Okay, always entertaining.
And we're going to be talking to a Clio team about their new driver and what they're going to be doing in Scotland, which doesn't involve Clios.
Because Clio's aren't there.
Indeed.
That's all still to come on this week's packed episode of Midweek Motorsport.
The Globecast Radio Channel, home of live sports coverage, where it just keeps on coming. Globecast
Radio. All the week's motorsport news, Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
Second part of the news tonight, apparently. We are, our cup's runneth over. Tim,
well,
what do you have?
The first part of the news had nothing but Formula One in it.
All right, okay.
Although there was rather speculation as well.
And gossip. It's got to be gossip, I thought.
I think we need more gossip. You started last week with, what was it called? Max Pappas.
Yes.
It was Magnus Major Maximus.
Magnus Major Maximus.
We didn't get any letters about that.
No, it's because nobody heard us on the internet. You need to reset that. Do it again right now.
Surely you get French letters for that.
It's a podcast. If you want to go and listen to it, we're not going to do it
talking,
today.
We're talking about...
There isn't time.
Okay.
Former Formula One star Johnny Herbert swapped horsepower of the four-wheel variety for a rather different type at Lake Como in Italy. As he tried out a P1 powerboat.
He's been talking about doing that for a while, actually.
The 43-year-old took to the driver's seat of the 11.3-litre Evolution-class front-runner Vetpunkt.com alongside throttleman Hannes Burhinch and navigator Ed Williams-Hawks in place of regular driver Miles Jennings. It was quite an eye-opener, said the three-times Grand Prix winner.
But it was.
And that's a bit where we have to have Herbert saying, it was quite an eye-opener.
Miles! I won't hear anything against Johnny Herbert.
Yeah, it's none of your business.
I won't hear anything against him. He's a fan of my show.
No, he's a... Is he?
Yeah. We met him at the Le Mans in the pits. I went to say hello, Johnny. He said, how are you doing? I thought, he recognises me from... Obviously, I used to do the Formula 1 stuff with him. And he came up and said, what are you doing here? You should be doing the radio control show.
Top look.
He's great. And we had a huge chat about that, because apparently what he's living in Monaco, he gets it in English from satellite feed. He's a big fan of the show.
Good.
There we go.
Okay. So
coming back in November for Series 2.
Good plug. Nicely done.
Does he listen to this show as well?
He will do now.
Yeah.
Now that we're talking about him again. He enjoyed his white-knuckle ride, and with a mooted outing in the British round of the 2007 UIM Powerboat P1 World Championships at Cowes on the 24th to 26th of August, he didn't rule out further appearances, even if there was a slight hint of trepidation in his voice. It's something I continue, he said, though being on the lake is one thing, being out at sea will be completely different.
Yes, people tend to lose their lives in those things.
And you get much worth lip-chapping at sea.
With monotonous regularity. However, though, he has got a bit of orange in his helmet, and everybody's got to wear orange helmets.
Lots of orange helmet.
Yeah, he's got. Really? Everybody's got to wear an orange helmet in their powerboats. That's why Tiffany Dell's helmet's orange.
Well, for powerboating?
Because his father used to do powerboating.
That's stunning.
Supernova International have become the second team to confirm their participation for the inaugural GP2 Asia Series, set to kick off in early 2008.
So that's the same Supernova that runs two teams, A1 GP, then?
Yes. they'll be joining BCN Competición on the initial entry list.
Tim, GP2 cars, they're leased, aren't they?
No,
they don't own them, aren't they? I heard they were
free to sell them.
Are they?
Yes.
But there's no engines, are there? They lease the engines.
They lease the engines.
Right, so they own the chassis.
Yes, they've bought them. And in fact, one team is about to sell one to McLaren so that it can paint it up in ART colours and put it in the museum.
Oh, really?
But it won't necessarily be ART.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I'm told it might be BCN.
But they just need a chassis.
Yes, they need
Because obviously it needs to be part of the Lewis Hamilton collection.
Correct.
Mm.
The Asian-based championship is set to run from January to April, where it will also support
a
handful of flyaway Formula One Grand Prix.
Yes, there is a calendar. We talked about this last week.
No, that was A1GP.
Oh, sorry, you're talking about GP2. Sorry,
GP2 Asia.
I know they're thinking of doing. They're going to support Malaysia, aren't they? Bahrain, I believe. But do you know what the rest of the calendar is?
They're going to Dubai, apparently. But I haven't heard anything firm that I'm allowed to talk to. GP2 race winner Adam Carroll's begun a rookie evaluation test for A1 Team Ireland as the outfit ponder their driver plans for the new season. Carroll,
who's
in the return to GP2 with victories at Silverstone and the Hungaro Ring, is scheduled to drive. In fact, he drove the A1 GP car at Stetterson today.
Yesterday. Is that Carroll C? Is it double R?
Yes.
Oh, right. Apparently he's on tour.
They always run them at Stetterson.
Apparently he's on tour at the moment, Adam Carroll.
Is he?
Yeah. I can't believe it's the same one.
I must admit, though, it was a miserable day today.
As Adam said, the first Silverstone test in a couple of weeks' time will be far more meaningful.
Hang on, I must just do this. This is Adam Carroll, Faraway Blues. The album is called.
Tim Meritus heaved a sigh of relief after it was announced that the result of round 6 of the Formula V6 Asia series at Sentul in Indonesia was final. Organisers Motorsport Asia Limited yesterday clarified there were no irregularities.
So it could be 17 or 18 years ago. You have no idea.
No, the race was at this weekend, so it's not that old.
It's probably Saturday or Sunday.
In fact, the race was on July the 22nd, but the press release this weekend.
Yeah, so basically
Motorsport
it was many
Asia
ago.
Chief Executive David Sunensha had stated earlier that the extended checks on the cars of Malaysian Team Meritus' second place finisher, James Winslow, fourth place Satrio Hermanto, and fifth place Earl Bamber had to be extended as they couldn't be concluded on site. The official statement...
Is this our pointless press release of the week?
Correct. Read, right. Following post-race scrutineering round 6... cars 58, 78 and 88 of Team
Meritus. We're going to get to the point where all we're going to have is various themed parts of the show. There's going to be no news, no interviews. It's just going to be all the parts of the story.
And you know what? And then we have Nirvana.
Well, go on, put them on. Smells like Teen Spirit.
I need to send you that link for Adam Carroll for his music, so every time we talk about him, we can have Adam Carroll.
Get him on the show in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
This brings to an end a trying phase in Meritus' whirlwind of
trying phase
so
in press
far,
releases.
Which also sees them facing a hearing over the double disqualification of their Formula BMW 1-2 finishes, Jasmin Fehan Jafar and James Grunwell.
Are there any relation at all to the Meritus Hotels and Resorts?
Don't know.
Are there any relation at all to any motorsport we give a...
The next round is at Chengdu in China on September the 15th.
Where in China?
Chengdu.
Which track's that?
Chengdu.
How are we spelling that?
Chengdu.
Is that the one that's just over the border Chengdu. From Hong Kong?
No, that would be Zhuhai.
Oh, Zhuhai, sorry.
Former Vauxhall driver Gavin Smith has returned to
the capital of the Sichuan province.
British Touring Car
Championship for
the final three races of the year in a privately entered stay at Laon. The Irishman, who raced for Vauxhall in 2005 and 2006, will have his first outing in the GR Asia engineered car at Brands Hatch this weekend.
So he'll be teammate to Adam Jones. Adam Jones is in Toledo, isn't he?
He is.
So where they got? Where, so this is one of GR Asia's actual WTCC ones.
WTCC cars.
Ah, that's actually quite interesting, isn't it?
It's the one being raced by Emmett O'Brien in the WTCC.
But that will therefore have to be converted because the WTCC Leons aren't running the same spec.
The WTCC Works Leons aren't running.
Oh right. So is the private running with a flat floor or not?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Jones, of course, is running in the Toledo, which was previously run by.
Jason or somebody else.
That Dutch driver.
Oh, what the thingy bob won the independent trophies and they got banned from being an independent and whose name's Tom Coronel.
Tom Coronel. There we go.
Yeah, struggling there.
Brother of Tim Coronel.
Tom and Tim.
They've obviously got some very imaginative parents as far as naming is concerned.
Mm. I think there's a third one, but I can't remember his name.
What do you think Lewis and Sarah then call their child?
Back to that.
They could call our new royal couple, couldn't they?
I think we need to have a Lewis and Sarah spot every week from now on.
Well, I think just who is Lewis frolicking with this week? So I'm sure it won't be her for very long. He'll be off frolicking somewhere else.
Frolicking. Is that the end of news part two?
Would you believe it? Yes, it is.
Thank goodness for that. Globecast
Radio. All the week's motorsport news. Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
It's Midweek Motorsport. I'm John Hindorf here in Wellingborough.
And down in London is Tim Gray, still making all the bits and pieces work. Tim, say hello to the audience again. Say hello to the listener.
Again.
Yes, good. Now, about, I think it was 5 or 6 weeks ago, Tim, we had a hero of British motorsport on the programme, did we not?
Yes, Dan Weldon joined us.
No, before that. Do you remember from Motorsport News? We called up somebody I know quite well, actually, Gary Robertshaw, who was in Motorsport News, identified as a hero of national motorsport, and we've got him on again tonight. Hello, Gary.
Hello.
Good to have you back, mate.
Thanks.
A lot has gone on in the last few weeks.
Yeah.
As we found out when we spoke to you about, as I say, 5 or 6 weeks ago, running, well, at that time, you were running a couple of cars in the British Touring Car Supports in the Clio Championship.
Yes, that's right.
Now, as of this weekend, how many cars are you running?
Well, it's expanded nicely to 5 cars.
Yes. Talk us through how that worked, because you started off with whom?
We started off with Alan Taylor and Chris Diamond at the start of the year, and all things were going very well, I must say, in the pre-season testing with Chris, and indeed at the first round. And literally at the first round, we got an inquiry from Michael Doyle to come on board, which he did. Mm-hmm. And then it's just kind of snowballed, really. I mean, we've had quite a lot of success as a team this year, which has brought a lot of attention to us in the Clio Cup paddock.
Mm.
And we've just had a stream of people coming along and just saying, can we get involved with your team somehow, you know?
Well, they say success breeds success. Barry Benham came on board at Donington Park. Barry's been involved in the championship before and immediately, I think, got his best ever result, tremendously.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we went on to Snetterton, where, in fact, you'd had a podium before with Chris, but you got your first victory.
That's right, in British Clio Cup first victory, yeah, absolutely. Very, very good weekend, that one.
That was a first with Michael, third with...
With Chris.
With Chris, a sixth with Barry, and I think a 19th from 31st or something for Alan. So, in fact, you had all four cars in the points there.
Yes, absolutely brilliant. Excellent result.
Now, this weekend we had a fifth to Robert Shaw Racing. Tell me about the fifth driver.
Yeah, Derek Pearce. During the season, we've kind of been having sort of little chats to and fro in the paddock, and we're sort of... exchange views on setups and just basic information, really. And Derek had said earlier in the season that he would sort of quite like to be with us, possibly for next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he found that it was running the car himself was quite tricky. So he did approach us after the last round and felt that he needed a team to go with, and we were the first person on his list, which is brilliant.
And, in fact, Derek is on our second line tonight. Derek, welcome to Midweek Motorsport.
Hello, good evening.
Well, welcome to the Robert Shaw fold, apparently. It's getting bigger and brighter. I mean, this is a bit of an awkward question to ask with Gary on the other line, but what made you choose Robert Shaw, then?
Well, as Gary was saying there earlier on, we seem to get parked up next to each other quite a few times in the paddock and what have you. We got talking, and I was running the car myself with a couple other boys, and it was difficult. It was an awful lot of work. I felt in the latter kind of few rounds there, I was trying basically to run a Premier Championship car. Almost club sport, you know. I was almost doing everything myself, you know, your tyre nomination, service in the car, you know, to the point I was jumping in the car, glad to get a seat, and not really, not really focused in the drive or the race.
You've made a good point there, Derek, because this Clio Cup this year, of any year, is probably the most competitive it's ever been, particularly with the qualification races that we've had at the majority of rounds, and really. I mean, honestly, do you think it's out of the reach now of even a well-run clubman?
I would say this year in particular, I mean, you just have to look at the quality of drivers. The quality of drivers is just immense. I mean, just about everybody in the top 10 is a champion of some sort. It's an absolutely incredible championship this year. And yes, I would say that it's just about got beyond the reach of trying to be a privateer running it almost yourself.
Now, you're talking about champions. We should say that you're no stranger to success. In fact, you are a world champion, are you not?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
You share a world championship with another friend of this programme, John Mickle, because you're,
you're the
world legends champion, is that right?
That's correct, yeah. I won the semi-pro world championship in 2003 in San Francisco.
Now, the Americans don't like it when Europeans, or particularly Brits, go across there. I remember John Mickle telling me when he did it that he didn't get a great reception. Was it the same for you?
Yeah, they honestly don't like it to the point that the I've got to say that the officials almost cheat to make it that the European guys are penalised in some sort of way. Yeah, they're very patriotic that way, I've got to say.
Well done for that. And I mean, what's the progression then from legends? Which, frankly, I've always wanted to have a go in, and nobody's been daft enough to let me have a car, because I think it looks like tremendous fun. What's the progression from Legends, which is a very basic form of motorsport with a motorcycle engine, a very simple setup, to a... I mean, these Clios, they've got diffusers, they've got slick tyres, they've got... I mean, that's quite a big difference. I mean, I know they're both saloon car looking like things, but there's quite a big difference there. How did you make the jump across?
Basically, the reason I made the jump across, or the decision I made the jump across, is I've always been a tin top fan, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I started in XR2s. I wanted to progress onto something else. And to be honest, I was doing most of my racing at Knock Hill at that point. And really, the only thing that took my fancy was the Legends. Basically, it ran its course. I mean, I could never say anything against the Legend Championship. It's fantastic, fantastic racing. The reverse grids and what have you, just absolutely immense. And you could run a full season and sort of £8,000. You know, I mean, it was incredibly cheap sport, considering you were getting three, possibly six races every weekend. The Clio Cup, I always wanted to do something a bit more prestigious, if you like. And when the Clio, when I actually seen it for the first time in the flesh, if you like, at the Autosport show, and I bought the car, basically, I was there on the Friday, and I bought the car on the Tuesday when
I
came back.
It's a proper racing car, isn't it?
Absolutely superb, yeah. It's just, they've really kind of leaned towards the touring car type image this time.
What's your best result so far this year?
14th. That's the best result this year, which hopefully after this weekend and expertise of Mr. Robert Shaw will be in the top 10.
No pressure there then, Gary. You've got to beat a 14th. Is it looking like we're going to have a qualifying race this weekend, or is the two championship races looking likely?
No, there's only one championship round this weekend, with Brands Hatch only able to... accommodates 32 cars on the grid. So, yeah, we've got the unfortunate lottery of the qualifying race on the Saturday.
Gary, got to ask you about this, because clearly Robert Shaw Racing has only been around for a short amount of time compared to some of the other teams that you're competing against, who have a vast knowledge of single-make racing, whether it's Renault Clios or other forms of racing.
Yeah.
Why do you think that you guys have come on stream so fast and been able to challenge the likes of, you know, Boulevard, TCR, the guys that normally are at the top of the tree, as it were?
Yeah, I like to do things correctly, and I like to do things methodically, and I think just that mentality throughout everything, to do with the preparation of the car, to do with the display boarding, the whole presentation of the outfit, everything. I like it done properly, and I'm a big believer of if you're methodical with everything, then at some point it's got to come good.
This year, get the little things right, and the big things will almost take care of themselves.
The attention to detail is my big...
Does it help that it's a new formula this year, and effectively everybody's had to start from a blank sheet of paper? Because obviously you had a little bit of a dabble last year, didn't you?
Well, I mean, last year was just a sort of a predecessor to this year. We were always intending on getting involved with new cars. And, yeah, it was very hard getting involved with the car last year because the other teams did have 4 or 5 years of development mm-hmm. where we were kind of stepping in and it was very, very difficult to get the car working, for example, like TCR did. Mm. But that was always a sort of prequel to what was happening, what was going to happen this year, you know.
Now, we're talking about Clio Cup at Brands this weekend, five cars. No Clio Cup at Knockhill, which is bad news for Derek, because he's a bit of a maestro around there, as well as Doyley, Michael, who's another well-known Scottish expert. However, you've got some big news for Knockhill, haven't you? And, I mean, can you tell us about this? There's been rumours in the motoring press, but you know, let's hear it from the horse's mouth, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's something we've been targeting to get involved with for some time, and it's been my, you know, one of my goals for the team, and we're finally going to achieve it this year. Is to run a touring car starting from Knockhill, and we'll run a touring car for the final two rounds of the championship this year, and then onwards for in the next year for two cars.
What are you racing, and who's going to be driving it?
We've got Alan Taylor. Transferring over from our Clio Cup team into one of the ex-Halfords Honda Integras. So it's a good car. It was driven, I believe, last year, one or two occasions by Matt Neal and Gareth Howell, so it's a competitive car. So, yeah, we're hoping to make an impact there, definitely.
And two cars for next year. Have you made the decision on which cars there will be yet, or is anything you can tell us, is that still in the secret draw?
It's looking highly likely we will have two Honda Integras, basically.
Right. And this is the coupes that Matt Neal and the guys run years ago.
Yeah. Well, one car's a 06 chassis and the other one's an 05 chassis. But, yeah, basically the same car. The exact car that the Halfords won the championship with last year, actually.
Well, congratulations on that. Does that mean you've got a spare Clio drive going for the end of the season, then?
John, for you, anything. Come down and get yourself in the car if you can fit.
Oh, hey, that's a bit harsh. I think Alan and I are pretty much the same across the backside. Gary, thanks for joining us tonight. Continued success.
And
sadly, I won't see your debut because I'm out of Detroit, but we'll be able to watch it on ITV Sport, of course. Derek, thank you for joining us as well. And good luck at Brands Hatch this weekend, mate.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
News from across the pond. If it happens over there, hear about it over here on Midweek Motorsport.
Now, this is Ear on the Oval, not just American news then, so we welcome back. It seems like he's hardly been away. Declan Brennan in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
It tastes like tarmac. Oh dear. Welcome back, dear listener. And Declan, a packed week this week, and what have you got to tell us about?
Well, you know, I think I'm going to hand it over to Tim and let Tim and guide us through the mire and mucus of the American Oval scene.
And mucus.
You're lucky you got that in quickly because Tim was just walking out the door on his way to get some food.
You can't eat if we can't.
I know, absolutely.
I thought you had eaten and said it tasted like tarmac.
No, that was the wine. Sorry, carry on. And that was my wife's. Description of the wine.
It's red, is it?
Mm. Well, frankly, there's no such thing as bad wine. There's just some that's better than others. It's a bit like other things. Anyway, NASCAR.
Yes.
Tim, what were we talking about?
They went to...
Kyle Busch. No, we've done that, have we?
We did that last week, didn't we?
Did we? The rumour is now official. Kyle Busch has signed a multi-year contract with Joe Gibbs.
He has.
We did cover that one last week.
Right, must
just sort of vaguely, yeah. But let's talk about
the race.
Well, let's first
talk about. Let's talk about before the race. Absolutely,
yeah,
Declan.
Qualifying.
Declan, please have a rant about this because I'm getting tired of every time a road racer or someone who looks like he might be able to take on some of the established stars of NASCAR on a road course, or indeed on an oval. Any time they get somewhere near the front, they cancel the qualifying.
Well, somebody on called into wind tunnel on Sunday night and had a beautiful description of all NASCAR road races. He basically described them as pro-am events, where the pros are the road racers and the ams are the idiots oval drivers who come in and attempt to compete. And Yes, and we had exactly that situation where I was one of very many people looking forward to qualifying and looking forward to seeing how some of the guys who are, like Boris said, particularly Boris, were going to do. And the
Ron Fellows, fourth position he was.
Oh, he was terrific, absolutely terrific ride in that car. Now, the rains came, and as usual, somehow we have this situation where because they don't race in the rain, therefore there's no rain tyres. There's no, they're not, these cars are not built to be raced in rain.
Nonsense.
So qualifying was cancelled. Therefore, all of the people who were in there, who were one-off ringers, who weren't in teams with owner points that got them into the race, didn't get in. And I'm particularly thinking of Mr. Boris Said. And one of the stories of the week was Robbie Gordon, in the aftermath of what happened the previous week, giving Marcus Ambrose a ride in the race. In an Xtel Cup car, he didn't get in either because obviously there was no qualifying. And this is even more infuriating when they cancel qualifying and then let open practice the following day go ahead.
Yes,
it's just, it's so infuriating and just wrong. And there's precedent set for it, and there's no need to do it. And NASCAR, you should be ashamed of yourselves. And lots and lots of disappointed fans. Luckily for Boris, Bill Elliott put his hands up and said, "You know what? I'm a bit rubbish. Would you like to drive my car instead? The 21 car, which was for Wood Brothers." And so Boris got into the race, which was terrific, and raced pretty well. But just another, farce of a weekend for NASCAR in that respect. Just
and who won the race?
The race was won by Tony Stewart.
And why did he win the race?
Because Jeff Gordon, late on the braking into turn one with a couple of laps to go, was under a bit of pressure, made a mistake, spun it, and Tony Stewart took the victory.
And do you know why he won the race? Other than that? Because he has a different set of brakes on that car to anybody else.
Ooh.
He has a special set of brakes for road courses, which nobody else uses, and nobody else is allowed to use. And that means that they don't fall apart after 10 laps. And therefore, that's why he can brake deeper into the corners than everybody else.
Oh, where did this come from then?
Well, I was in the States at the weekend. I watched SportsCenter and NASCAR TV. And I watched Rusty Wallace or somebody talking about it on the build-up to the race.
That didn't get mentioned during the race at all?
Of course it didn't, because they don't want to let people know that.
Well, the big talking point, of course, was the incident involving Kevin Harvick and Juan Pablo Montoya.
We've had a bit of a history, haven't they?
Well, at the start of the year, Harvick was one of the people who really gave Montoya a lot of support, and he was one of the guys who actually gave him a lot of help in terms of his approach to oval racing. But on one of the restarts, one of Montoya's problems was he was running a longer, and I think he regrets it now, they were running a longer, lower gear. And it took him a little bit longer to get going than other people. And on the dive into turn one on a restart with about 12, 15 laps to go, he felt a bit of pressure from Martin Truex Jr. He decided to pull across to make sure Truex Jr. couldn't get on the inside of him. Truex Jr. punted him, unfortunately, directly forward. He went across the apex of the corner and hit Kevin Harvick. Not his fault at all.
Harvick had won the Busch race, hadn't he?
Yes, he had.
Again, and well done to him, and he's now 16 million points ahead of the field.
Don't worry, Carl Edwards, if he stopped now, would win the Busch Series anyway, so that's right, the foregone conclusion.
We like Kevin Harvick, though, for still racing in that.
But Kevin Harvick got out of the car. Don't forget, Jeff Burton had been collected in this as well, so basically two of the top Richard Childress Racing cars went out. Jeff Burton made a stupid point and said it was Montoya's fault because he drifted back onto the track and he hit him, when in fact, if you look at it carefully, he just about stopped spinning and he hit him just as the car came to a halt. So the idea that he somehow let the car drift back onto the track to block it is just ridiculous. But basically, Harvey pulled up in front of the stricken 42 Dodge, got out, Harvick went over, a fight ensued, lots of pushing and shoving, and Montoya trying to explain that it wasn't his fault, which it wasn't. Lots of things were said afterwards. Harvick basically saying he's in a wreck every week, I just want to kick his backside, blah, 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 blah. Montoya saying afterwards that he's lost all respect for him and blah, blah, blah. So, and of course, that was the main talking point after the race was these. And what I did notice was, and Nick, if he's still there, will probably want to comment on this, what I did notice was that he might be shorter, but Montoya is definitely has the weight advantage.
He always has done. He always said that, you know, the main reason he was going to America was the Big Macs are cheaper. But talking about Montoya, interestingly, he is the face of EA Motorsport's new NASCAR 08 release, which they're actually bothering putting out on all console formats this year. They don't really bother. But Montoya in his Havilland outfit is fronting up the European versions. Is he fronting ones in the States, Dex, do you know?
No, it's Tony, on the Xbox 360 version at least. I've got to double check this, but it's Tony Stewart.
Why isn't it, I would have thought it was Jeff Gordon or Dale Earnhardt.
Well, they've done it before. They have done it before. Harvick's done it before. Elliott Sadler's done it before. They don't necessarily go for a champion or the best driver. They pick somebody specifically. Oh, and luckily, they don't have the same issues that the people who appear on the front of the Madden tend to have, because there is actually a Madden curse. Everybody who's appeared on the front cover of Madden has then suffered a major season-ending injury.
I take it isn't on the game cover for Europe and the rest of the world. It doesn't have the tyre that Harvick's pit crew displayed at Daytona that said, go back to F1 so you don't have to race.
That sounds a friendly greeting for young Juan Pablo. Mm. No, I don't think it does. I think he's just got Juan Pablo. Interestingly, I wonder what was odd about him on the front. I realise now he's looking quite slim, so he may have received some picture touch-up.
A bit of Photoshop, yeah. That is very, very likely, in all honesty.
Apparently as well, the NASCAR spokesman, Curry Tharp, which is nearly, if it was Thrapp, it would be a better name, but it's Tharp.
Not a racing driver.
No, indeed. And you're eating. Said Harvick will not be penalised for using the word ass on live television, because apparently it doesn't violate FCC, that's the Federal Communications Commission, just in case you didn't know, regulations.
Have you not noticed that actually there was a report that came out about the FCC saying that TV stations can no longer be held accountable for what people say in live broadcasts?
Really?
So if they go down the MTV Awards or at NASCAR and have an erroneous F or S word comes out, then they cannot be fined. The FCC was very upset about it and fought it, but no, it was seen as a big victory for free speech. Obviously, if you have a wardrobe malfunction, and God forbid someone sees a nipple in America, the whole place grinds a halt, doesn't it, Dex?
Absolutely, and there are one or two words that I'm surprised they're allowed to use, but Tony Stewart got fined recently for using the long form of BS.
Yeah, but he did that deliberately. He was trying to be awkward at that point.
Of course he was.
Yeah, he didn't. It wasn't the heat of the moment. It was very much measured. Look at me, I'm such a rebel. Ha ha ha. Oh, I've just lost 25 driver points. Rats.
And £25,000. Well, of which more later. Move on. $25,000, sorry. Silly ass. Move on.
To what, apparently?
Tim has now nipped out.
Sorry, I was expecting Declan to move on to IRL.
IRL.
Tim, I have to remember, I like your guiding hand to push me through the murky waters of American oval racing.
Yes, but can you warm it up, please, next time?
Do you know that IRL had coverage on the British Tea Time News on Sunday evening?
Twice in 2 weeks, then, in that case.
They had a 1 minute on the primetime ITV news about Dario having his second crash in 2 weeks.
The week before, he was on for having his first crash in one week.
Amazing. I was sitting there, as you do, come back from my own little racing down in radio control stuff, and went, blooming heck, and there it was, as I said, watching. It was a really quite big item about Dario's second crash. I didn't know anything about it, because I've been watching the race live and then falling asleep because it had gone on a bit too long. Dario's crashed. Then I found out he crashed on the slowdown lap and thought, that sounds just a little bit silly.
And he did say it was his fault.
You know what? I don't think there's anything at all more telling than his reaction in his post-race interview when he was pretty shell-shocked and knew it was all his own fault. The fact that he literally was only told it was the checkered flag about 1 second before he hit Koski Matsura up the backside and went straight over.
You can say ass, actually. That's all right.
So, you know what? It was completely his own fault. But if he'd had a glass head and you're able to see into what he was thinking, you do get the impression he's probably thinking, I've really had enough of this.
Did you see him on Larry King, Dex?
I didn't, know.
It's very good, actually. They had... they had Dario on, and then they had that Australian kid who came down from about 50 feet from the skateboard at the X Games. And then they had, what's his name? Schumacher, who drives the army.
Tony Schumacher.
Tony Schumacher. Sorry, I had Larry Schumacher in my mind. I knew it wasn't that. Tony Schumacher. Men who have cheated death and carried on with their sport. And it was really funny because every one of them went, oh, I wouldn't do what you do for $1 million. Oh, no, but I wouldn't do what you do for a million. So we have spoken to Dario and said, you've got to stop doing that just to get on national television.
No, I think as Dex said, Dario just needs to get through this season, get so he can win it, and then get out of that silly sport and go and drive sports cars and enjoy it.
When Dario was on Larry King Live, was he introduced as husband of Ashley Judd?
He was indeed, he's now husband of Ashley Judd and Indy 500 winner Dario Franchitti.
But Ashley Judd isn't that big a film star, is she?
She's quite big.
Is she?
Yeah.
She's not A-list, is she?
Just about, probably, yes.
B plus.
Have you ever seen that film where she gets done for murdering her husband who's not dead?
Double Jeopardy.
That's the only way I've seen her.
Fantastic movie.
I mean, she's a good looking girl. I mean, well done, Dario, but she's not a big star.
Well, she is sort of, her family are sort of royalty in below the Mason-Dixon line, aren't they?
Mm. I must remember one thing I did like about her, when they had the victory pictures of him at the Indy, because it had been raining, her dress was very wet, and she did not look good in that, but there we go. As I might meet Dario in the near future, perhaps I should shut up.
Yeah. Right now. We'll be having Dario Franchitti on the programme in the next couple of weeks.
I better duck.
We thought we were going to get him this week, but he's been travelling. But we have been swapping emails with Dario, so we will have him in the next couple of weeks. So if you've got any questions for Dario around his Indy 500 win, if you remember, we spoke to him just before that historic occasion in the week leading up to it, or indeed any of his rather spectacular ends to races recently, it's studio@0157.org.
Can we talk about the other major incident in that race before we get to the fact that Tony Kanaan dominated, winning it tremendously easily?
Hospital?
Oh, somebody, I did read somewhere on the internet, somebody describing the accident as she ran out of talent leaving the pit lane.
But that was a long time ago.
She runs that time before she arrives at the circuit.
Oh, God, it was just, you know what?
Nice hair.
What I really enjoyed about the aftermath of her completely ridiculous and self-inflicted incident is that Kim Green was interviewed. Kim Green, who obviously owns Andretti Green Racing, but it takes an active role in managing her on a race day or a race weekend basis, took all of the pressure off her. And basically, he may as well have been saying, oh, please, for goodness, Motorola, don't take your money away on account of the fact that your driver just, out of sheer incompetence, spun, flat-spotted her tyres, then drove too quickly around to join the other cars under yellow, blew a tyre and nearly hit the safety car. That's basically what he was saying.
Is that what happened?
Yes. she'd spun coming out of the pits, flat-spotted the tyres, got the car going, placed it under the yellow. She was doing about 160 on severely flat-spotted tyres, the rear blue, and she was so lucky, she spun backwards and went between the wall and one of the safety cars, one of the Honda safety cars. She was massively lucky that she didn't hit it. She was going way too fast, unnecessarily too fast, considering, you know, the tyres were flat spotted. She was going to have to join the tail line and get back into the pits and change them. It was absolutely
bonkers.
And Kim Green came on and said, oh, you know, it's my fault. I should have told her to go more slowly. No, it was her fault for being thick.
Did she come on and say, unfortunately, the car just hasn't stood up for me today, and I'll only go to Formula One if it's a decent team?
No, she came on the radio and said, I think we've spun and we've flat spotted the tyres, is what she said.
Dex, I think we've spun, did she?
No,
Dex,
she didn't say that.
Dex, can I ask you a pertinent question? Because I've forgotten, right? This is the thing. I'm confused about, I'm going to say it, Danica. What did she do in the first place that got this drive?
She was second in the Formula Ford Festival to her teammate Anthony Davison. When they had clearly better cars than everybody else.
Because I can't work
that's
it out.
That's her best result in the last decade.
Yeah, the only American racer, female racer, I've met Sarah Fisher, and she's lovely. I really like Sarah Fisher.
She's quite a talented driver as well, driving a bag of pants car.
But I don't understand what Danica's done. She actually won a race?
No, we've used this.
This is why we don't mention her name.
Like, this is Point Break. Didn't she win Indy Lights or something?
We don't talk about Catherine Legg, and Catherine Legg has won Formula Atlantic races, including Long Beach.
She's won three.
Yes.
That's three more than Danica did.
Yeah, and we do seem to talk about Danica a lot, and she never won in Formula Atlantic at a time when she had definitely had the best machinery.
In fact, can somebody email us, please? Because I can't be bothered, frankly, to do the research because I don't want to go back that far.
She last time she won was in karts, I've checked. I've gone through this.
So the last time she won was in go-karting?
Yes.
Good heavens. So I've won a race more often than Mrs. Hospital has.
More recently.
More recently.
And so have I.
And so have you, yes. Well,
and in the mid-race interview, she did an interview about when she wins her first race. It's just, I wish they'd just stop. It really is just beyond, like...
Well, then again, you think about it, if Dario retires, and they'll get someone rubbish to replace him in IRL, and eventually Marco will give up.
And Tony Kanaan.
And Tony Kanaan's had enough.
Yep.
Elio Castroneves' wing keeps falling off. At some point, because there's only six or seven decent cars, she can't keep finishing seventh.
No, but you see, the problem is she can't set the car up, because if Tony and Dario aren't there, there won't be anyone to set the
and
car up.
And of course, she's too light to set up on her own.
And you know what one of the big problems is as well, is that for her, the other elephant in the room, is there are nine, and we've talked about this before, there are eight good cars.
And she comes eighth.
At the moment she's just slightly ahead because Marco has had such a disastrous season. There are really only eight cars that are actually capable of winning. And she tends to be, she's seventh or eighth in the championship. In fact, I'm just about to go and check exactly. So really, of all of the cars that are actually capable of winning, she's the worst of them.
Do you know what... I'm going to say something here that's slightly against the grain for this programme. She's actually not a bad driver, right?
No, she's
not a great driver.
The point about it is and this thing, a very good point you've made there, because it's the same conversation I've had. I remember having a chat with someone about a guy called Ricardo Bossett, who ran
Ricardo
for a couple
Rosset.
Of years in Formula
yeah.
1, and had a disastrous final season. His head went, which is, you know, is very important. And people going, oh, that Ricardo Rosset, he's...
Apparently there's nothing wrong with Danica's head.
Exactly, and he's rubbish and this sort of stuff. I'll let it pass. But he wasn't. The fact was, these drivers are bloody good. Mm. They're just not quite as bloody good as the guy slightly ahead of them.
No,
I think Dex, you and I have talked about this before. It's not the question. Clearly she can drive a car. She's not 20 seconds off the pace. She can get the car. And I know, you know, we've said before, it's all because the way the rules are that it benefits her, because she actually weighs only 2.25 kilos and everybody else weighs 100 kilos. Actually, Dario will now punch me for that, because I bet he doesn't. I bet he only weighs about 65 or 70. But she weighs 20
kilos.
I don't
weigh 100 kilos.
She weighs 20 kilos less than everybody else, so the car's measured without the driver in, so she's got an advantage when it's all about lightness and speed and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay, let's put all that to one side. She can drive a car, no doubt about it. When she was in the UK, she was actually very competitive. What you've got to remember is why she came to the UK in the first place. She came to the UK in the first place because she had a bit of a karting family who were well-known, allegedly, for having disagreements with people up and down the pit lane in karting in the US.
Selection karting dads.
Yes, absolutely. And there'd been a bit of fisticuffs and a bit of finger pointing and a bit of shouting and name calling. She came to the UK, Jackie Stewart took her under his wing and helped her with her driver development on the staircase of talent.
Let's go down Alton Park with a big dish with a mullet ball in it.
And... That's formula finesse. That's very difficult, that. And she did all right.
Named after me at the corner, you know.
No, there's no corner named after me, and I won the World Championship 3 times. She was quite good in Formula 4. She was competitive. Her teammate was Anthony Davison in the festival. Anthony Davison won that festival, and I can't remember what year it is. Somebody will tell us. At the Canter, she had...
2001.
Sorry, say again,
2001,
thank you. He won that at a canter. They clearly had the perfect setup for that weekend. However, she still had to race in the second. And let's not forget that. That's the Formula Ford Festival. That's the World Championship of Formula Fords. And I know in 2001, everybody say, oh, it's not like it used to be. Okay, put that to one side. She's a good driver. I've seen her race sports cars. She has adapted very quickly. She raced a Ferrari 550 at Petit Le Mans a few years ago, or at the Road Atlanta anyway. Maybe it was the spring race. But she is not the second coming. She is not the best driver in IRL by a long chalk. She's not even in the top 5 or 6 drivers in IRL.
The hype she is getting or has got
is unjustified. It's not justified.
Of the same level or greater than we have seen around Lewis Hamilton. The difference is that Lewis Hamilton can win races and is the real deal.
It's greater.
Danica.
It's greater.
Is a good looking girl.
He's won races. He won 15 races in his Euro Series race. Look at how many season. Look at how many races he won in GP2 from the back of the grid. It's absolutely warranted. He's a talent. Forget about anything else. He's a talent. She is a talent, but she's not the next great thing. She's a girl who's doing all right.
You only have to look at the in-car from any IRL race to see that the girl has talent. Because,
yes, absolutely, because the car moves around so much.
Because you sit there and think, you know what? Would you want to drive one of those things at 200 miles an hour?
No.
Have the guts and the talent to do that?
No.
That she is a talent. Absolutely.
I would never drive any open wheel car, ever. It scares the bejesus out of me. I sat in a Formula Ford once, and that was enough.
But you know what? But therefore, you have to recognise she has ability and justify. You know, she's done enough to be in a team that she's probably done enough to be in IRL right now because she's pretty good. She's finishing in the top 10. Therefore, I think what we tend
to the best team.
Yeah, but what we tend to get annoyed about is the nonsense that goes on around her. But then, Billy, she doesn't help it by just being surly and acting like she has some divine right to be winning races and to be messing with the big boys.
Do you know, it's funny, Dex, you say that because you just reminded me of something. When she did come and race in the American Le Mans Series, I had a word with her PR person because I hope that we always treat every driver with give them a fair crack of the whip, male, female, you know, whatever creed, colour or form they are. And she came in and she was tremendously aggressive towards the press in sports car racing. She was surly, to say the least. And I actually had a word with the PR person who was looking after her at the time and said, and I'm not going to mention who it is, but it's a well-known person in sports car racing. And I said to them, you know, we're not trying to catch her out. We're not playing on the female angle. We're just asking her the same questions that we would ask anybody else. And all she's given us is lip, quite honestly. And either she stops it, or we stop talking to her and stop talking about the team. Because I just can't be bothered with it. There's no need for it. And she had a real attitude. And I thought I'd seen that change, to be honest, Dex. But now I'm not so sure. And you know what the worst thing is? She's believing her own hype. And that is the problem. She's got to get her feet back on the ground and realise that she's an average driver in an average series. She's not even in the top six in a series that has three or four really good drivers. And the rest are also runs.
Imagine you combined the talents of imagine there was no split and there was 34 of those drivers. If she got into the top 10 week in, week out, she'd be doing well. And who would want to talk about somebody who can just tinkle around in 10th to 15th place every week?
Exactly.
You know, it's just.
Well, ask Sarah Fisher about that when she was racing in that series before Mrs. Hospital came around, and she was around the bottom end of the top 10. But you know, the other thing is you've got to ask about the equipment. You've got to, anyway. We've talked too much about it for somebody who's never won anything.
Just to finish, what woman is the best ever finish in an IRL race?
Sarah Fisher. Yeah.
Sarah Fisher.
So, and let's hope it stays that way.
She doesn't even have. She's not. She can't even claim to be the most successful woman in IRL in terms of finishes in races. So let's move
on. I'm told by people who know that away from the track, she's very good company. Her and her husband are fantastic people, and good luck to them. And and everybody thinks I have got a personal thing against her. I don't. I just think that somewhere somebody's got to wake up. I love the marketing opportunity. I think it's fantastic, but you've got to be realistic about this.
But you know what?
If you carry on the way it's going, Dex, it's going to implode on itself.
John, it's exactly the same. And to get us back to here on the old, it's exactly the same. Exactly the same with Dale Jr.
Yes, absolutely right.
For the first time this weekend, I heard people on ESPN, and don't forget, ESPN are there. They now have the rest of the races for this season. It's their job to hype the Nextel Cup. I even heard comments there about he has got to get his act together because right now he hasn't won a race. He's had four top fives this season.
Mm.
None of the hype is justified with him. None of it. He's going south as regards the chase. In practice, he buzzed the engine over the weekend to the point where it was always going to blow in the race.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a no talent flag straight away. He's unfortunate that he's Dale Earnhardt. He can't really do a lot about that. The fact is, you know, but he also could manage people's expectations. Oh, but he doesn't. He takes the money from Wrangler and from Budweiser and everybody else. He takes the money from the way she takes the money from GoDaddy and from Argent Mortgage and all these people. And you know, unfortunately, you sort of, it's a double-edged sword. You know, you appear all the time on TV in commercials like he does. You're expected to be actually quite good on the track. It's the Anna Kournikova, Michelle Wee thing.
Ta-da! Absolutely spot on. Can we? All right, I'm going to stop this now because we've spent too much time on it. And then I'm sure that.
Let's move on to Champ Car then.
Let's move on to Champ Car. Somebody else who's overhyped.
That was.
And let's, somebody else who's overhyped but at least can win races, that would be Sebastian Bourdais.
Well, I don't think he's over. You can't say he's overhyped when he demolished the field the way he did.
Only when he got the conditions that he wants and the tyres he wants and the car that he wants and everything else.
Yeah, but he did demolish the field, in all fairness. And yes, obviously it would have been great if there'd been rain on the Sunday instead of the Saturday.
Tell me about it. I've had a fill for an hour.
Dex, he may have demolished the field, but what field?
Yeah, that's very true. Clint,
I mean,
he's
the one guy, Robert Dornbos, who obviously is the main talent challenge to Sebastian.
And Willpower, in fairness.
And Willpower as well. Willpower had a gearbox issue, which meant he had no chance of challenging. And then, of course,
Dornbos had a teammate issue.
I watched it live. I watched quite a lot of this weekend. And I was just shocked. I was shocked that Dan Clark went past so aggressively, especially considering the fact that he's lost his copy with the team so much. They kind of said in the commentary that it was Dornbos's fault, but it seemed to me he got front end washout because the way that Dan Clark cut in so quickly.
Yeah.
And
what you don't know about that part of the track, because you can't see it on television, but I was fortunate enough to do some pretty quick laps around there in an R8 on Thursday of last week, and a road car Audi R8, by the way, before anybody thinks I sat in a sports car. That would just be stupid. It falls away. It is a steep downhill run to turn 5, and it's very bumpy offline. So if you're not to the right-hand side, if you're to the middle or the left-hand side, which is where Dornbos was, you get front-wheel chatter and you don't stop. Mm. And it is so downhill that all the weight's on the front of the car. So it's easy to lock
up
the front end.
If you look at the incident, he didn't do what they described it as, him missing his braking point and going into the back. If you looked at it, he'd actually already pulled out of the left. Because it's like, you know when you get into a motorway and you think you're going to have an accident, what you immediately do on a heavy braking is try and get into a different lane.
Yeah.
I think as soon as Dan Clark topped in front of him, he knew he was in trouble. So he was actually trying to get out to go down the side and then went to the back of him.
Now, sports cars don't brake till after the 100-yard marker there, right? Now, that incident happened way before that. Mm. I like Dan. He's a friend of the show. He braked early.
Also, if Dan had been with a different team, I'd have gone, fair enough. But he's his teammate, for goodness sake.
It shouldn't be that close.
It shouldn't be that close. If Dan's fast on a fast strategy, let him through. If he's not, Robert's going for championship, Dan isn't, and needs to get brownie points with the team. You know, where is the brain being engaged by either Dan Clark or the team? Mm. Frankly.
It does sort of smell of the fact that they run quite independently, doesn't it? That it doesn't really—it's almost like two teams in one.
Smells of that.
But it doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help the fact that they're. Let's be honest. One thing they haven't got in Champ Car is oodles of cash. The last thing you need is your main championship protagonist being knocked back. You know.
Oh, absolutely, and you know it's not. It doesn't help the show, and it doesn't help the championship. If you look at the championship positions now, there's now a 37 point gap because of that. Yeah, Willpower is probably out of it. He's 53 points behind Bourdais. Dornbos is now 37 points behind. So unless Dornbos has goes mental at his home races and crushes Bourdais, it's going to be difficult to see anybody beating Bourdais now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, first of all, I think Sebastian did very well on the weekend. He didn't put a foot wrong, but he was just helped out. Mm. I mean, if Dornbos had come in second or third, and, you know, give Graham Rahal his due, he was driving very well that weekend.
That was a very sensible, professional drive by Graham Rahal.
Mature was the word I used when I watched it, actually.
If Dornbos had come in third, which is probably where he should have come without the accident, then what we were looking at is a damaged invitation, which happens at certain meets. Certain times, your rival is quicker than you. You go for damaged invitation. I mean, McLaren and Ferrari are always talking about it. But you get taken out by some hothead. I know which I think Dan is, and that's his problem. I think he's a very quick driver, but I don't think he's necessarily got brain engaged the whole time. Not tactical brain. Anyway.
Well, even when he threw that win away at Cleveland by spinning it up on the last lap.
You know, and it's just ridiculous. And I was beyond surprised. I mean, I like Sebastian, and I don't actually sign up the Sebastian backlash that's been going on recently.
I think he's been shown up for being less of a driver than he really is.
I tell you what, where he has been shown up, and which really, really won't work in his advantage when he gets to Formula 1, is the amount of pressure that's been applied to him in terms of in individual races and overall within the championship has shown a very bad side to him. And he's going to have pressure every week with a teammate in F1 who's going to be... Because the first thing in F1 you've got to do is you've got to beat your teammate.
Well, not wishing to suck up to John. He didn't handle pressure particularly well the opening lap of Le Mans 24 Hour either. Where he threw off the road on corner four and didn't manage to lead the first lap. But... I mean, Sebastian, he's had a difficult year.
Oops.
I think you're right. I think you guys... Sebastian had a difficult year. He's had the Peugeot Le Mans programme, which is distracting. What he thought was a shoe-in for Championship 4 has been more difficult than he thought because of Will Power's emergence and Robert Dornbos. He's also been trying to get the F1 thing sorted out, and he's been running four or five different cars. So, yeah, I think it may have got to him slightly, I think, but as you say, Dex, it's a big test. He's up against Vettel. Vettel will be, we've had 9 or 10 races, which is more than Sebastian would have, so the experience isn't going to play much. And he's going to have to hit the ground running, and he's going to have to hit the ground performing in the first 3 or 4 races of next year in F1, where they won't win the circuit.
You only have to look at it, we've discussed it already, you only have to look at the way the management at Scuderia Toro Rosso have handled their drivers and the pressure they put on them. If he mishandled their drivers, if he doesn't get off to a very good start, there'll be pressure from the press, there'll be pressure from the French press, because that's another thing you've got to think about, is that there's a Frenchman,
Good point, Dex.
That's a very good point.
That's pressure from the French press, there'll be pressure from the management, because they seem to be... What I can't get about Scuderia Toro Rosso is they seem to be under pressure to perform, even though they're in a team that isn't capable of performing at a level that... the management of expectations seems to have gone with that team as well,
That's because of who's managing it. Gerhard Berger, who is, quite frankly... not the greatest realist in the world.
Don't expect him to be managing the team.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I was going to throw it back to you there, Tim, because, I mean, you're very certain, aren't you, that Nicola Tott's going to be running that team?
Yes, him and Frederic Vasseur.
Which would be great, because you'd have, rather than having a bon vivre racing drive, you'd actually have some racing team managers who know what they're doing running the team.
Back to the original point, is that Burday this year just hasn't shown enough calmness of head to prove to me that when he gets to F1, he'll be able to maintain it. Because the pressures in F1, he's almost racing invisibly. He's in the best team in Champ Car. He's in, without question, the best car, the best funded car, and the best run team. Everything is in his favour, and he's still throwing his dollars out of the pram against guys who aren't as good as him. Once he gets into F1, it's a completely different situation.
Here's my prediction. I think he'll have his doors blown off by his teammate next year, and he will leave, and I don't think he'll do a full season, and it will be another embarrassment for American open wheel racing that produces a driver who is apparently multi-talented, tremendously dominant, and then comes to Europe and is less than average.
I completely disagree.
Don't worry about the future of American open wheel racing, though, John, because Champ Car Atlantics was concluded at the weekend at Elkhart Lake, and we have a new champion.
Rafael
Matos.
Rafael Matos has come up through Mazda.
He's the future of American open wheel racing.
Doesn't sound very American.
Does he not?
No, a lot of people in America have odd names because it's
exactly
a strange
nation. Brazilian.
Brazilian now with $2 million to spend in Champ Car next year.
Yes, but don't worry, because a second place driver wasn't Brazilian. Frank Pereira.
He sounds very American.
He's Colombian, isn't he?
He's French. The third place driver in this staircase of American racing talent was Robert Wickens.
From Banbury.
Canada.
All right.
But don't worry, because fourth was a proper...
good old boy.
Hinchcliffe.
He was also Canadian.
Yes. Giacomo Ricci.
Italian.
Ryan Lewis.
Scottish, English. New Zealand.
British, yes. Kevin Lacroix.
Canadian.
Junior Strauss.
Junior Strauss.
Austrian.
He's in the Netherlands.
He's Austrian Jamaican, isn't he?
Ronnie Bremer.
American. Yeah.
Danish.
Ronnie Bremer is
mad. Simona De Silvestro.
Italian.
Swiss.
Swiss Italian. Where was the first American then?
It was the very American senator, Jonathan Bomarito.
He's Californian, isn't he?
When is Marco Asma going to get a chance in anything good?
Marco Asma is currently dominating the British Formula 3 Championship and is likely to wrap it up quite quickly because he's miles ahead of Mauro Engel.
And forgive me again, because I should know this, but 2 or 3 years ago, was Richard Antonucci not the next great American racing driver?
Yes.
Disappeared.
What happened to him?
British Formula 3.
And then disappeared because he'd spent $1 million a year doing British F3 and he ran out of money.
He wasn't very good.
Well, when we're talking, as we were last week, to Ollie Milroy, you'd finding out that to do a series of Euro Formula BMW, which is the first stepping stone on that staircase of talent from karting, is going to cost about €700,000 next
year. It's
not
really the first step, is it, though?
I heard that.
Yes, it is. It's straight out of karting.
Sorry, €700,000? Yes. I thought it was $700,000.
No.
That's €1 million. $1 million?
It's not.
That's $1 million.
It's close on. Half a million quid. Half a million quid.
$1 million.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
right.
Absolutely ridiculous.
It's nonsense, isn't
it? Apparently some teams are doing it for as little as €400,000.
Ah, well, yeah, but they'll be the some teams that are at the back. The future of
these
American road...
£12,000!
No, they don't. They cost €60,000, the cars. They're very expensive. It's twice a Formula Renault.
And you need to then have all
and
the
it's
spare
five,
parts.
£5,000 a corner.
And travel.
And he's 6 Grand Prix, which obviously mean that you're going to have a nightmare for travel and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the future of American road racing is Pat Long, right? He is the best road racer that America has produced for years and years and years. And he hopefully shortly will be in a prototype Porsche with CAT Solarari Racing.
But you know what's ironic about that?
Yep.
He raced with Danica Patrick in Formula Ford at the same time.
Yes, exactly right.
She beat him.
That's true, but you know what? I bet you she wouldn't now.
Can I throw another name into the fire?
Go on then.
There is a very good American single seater racer who has done Formula 3000.
Right.
Has done A1GP.
Ooh, Mr. Hill.
No, not Derek Hill. He hasn't done A1GP.
No, continue the word very good.
Jumped in a bit early there, Dex. I'm afraid that's a 5-point penalty in the full question to
Jonathan
Oxford Belial.
Is it Jonathan Summerton?
Jonathan Summerton wasn't the name I was thinking of.
Phil Giebler?
Phil Giebler was the person I was going to say.
And you don't
Jonathan
get two
Summerton
goals, so that's a 5-point penalty to you as well.
Damn. Jonathan Summerton is an equally good talent, and there's a lot of people campaigning to get him into Formula 1.
What's he doing this year?
You don't know.
I'll look it up.
No, too late now. There's not time. All right. Is that it for here on the Oval?
I think
we have to laugh, please, before we go. It's something I meant to mention last week.
Yes.
I do think we have to laugh out loud at the tremendously exciting Rookie of the Year title race in IndyCar,
which is between
Milka Duno.
Milka Duno, who's done about five races, and Ryan Hunter Ray, who's just behind her after doing two.
Do you know what? If I can get a drive, I might win that.
Absolutely.
It's not a series for rookies, then.
Well, we did discuss at the start of the season that, don't forget, IndyCar did change the regulations to say it was at their discretion.
Yeah.
As to who would be considered a rookie.
Well, John Boss is a rookie this year.
Give me some card.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Sorry, champ card. Oops. Yeah. Back in time then.
Sorry, yes, exactly. But yes, you see the point I'm making. Rookies who aren't really rookies.
Well, let me just open up the Bombardier Learjet Rookie of the Year standings, which will make very, very excellent reading. Again, signs of the apocalypse and reasons why this series is absolutely on its backside.
You can say it's all right. The FCC have said it's okay.
It's a beautiful segue. Phil Giebler is a beautiful segue into this because, of course, he did appear at the Indy 500 and he's in third place in the Rookie of the Year standings with a total of 10 points.
He's the previous IPS champion, isn't he?
So Reed, I have to ignore that because I'm just looking at the title chase and it's so exciting that I can't even wait for next week.
Come on,
because
then.
Milka Duno in the lead with 81 points. Ryan Hunter Ray after three races almost not finishing on 69 points.
So he could overtake him for the lead this weekend.
He could and probably will.
Well, I should be glued to my television set to see that.
And then next year, you know, next year, if Milka wins it this year, you guarantee IndyCar will be using her in ads next year saying, IndyCar, Rookie of the Year.
She's done two races.
And she's on, you know, by the way, after, you know, it's the old thing in school when you say that there's always one who spoils it for the rest.
Mm.
Well, basically, after Dario's little excursion at the end of the race, the rest of the IndyCar field has joined Milka Duno on being on probation for the rest of the season.
Declan Brennan, thank you very much. That was Ear on the Oval. More from Declan next week. Let's have your comments, please. studio@0157.org.
News from across the pond. If it happens over there, hear about it over here on Midweek Motorsport.
And that's about it for this week's Midweek Motorsport.
Tell us, Tim, what's coming up next week?
Well, next week we continue our...
You are Mr. Voiceover.
What's coming up next week?
It's Marcus Grubbell.
Next week, listener.
It's a chance to look at the 1/10th World Championship.
It certainly is.
It's not Marcus Grubbell. There's no radio-controlled cars. Next week, we conclude our countdown to Champ Car coming to Europe. We've had Robert Doornbos from Holland. We've had Jan Halen from Belgium. So, who should we have next week?
Belgium, the two places where they're going.
Yes.
And would it by any chance be one of the British drivers?
It would indeed.
Is it Crasher Clark?
It's not.
Is it Too Tall Wilson?
It could be.
All right.
So is it, or is it
basically,
Catherine?
Basically, we've got a choice.
Up.
Do we want Justin Wilson or do we want Catherine Legg?
Catherine Legg. No, Justin Wilson. We've done Catherine before, haven't we?
We've done Justin before. We've done Justin this year.
Can we not have them both? Why do we have to choose? Why do we have to choose? Life shouldn't
Let's
be about
have
choice.
Both. Let's have that tall bloke with long legs and the girl with called Leg.
Ah, very good.
Should we get Dan as well?
No.
Yeah, let's have a triumvirate of British.
We'll ask him the question about teammates.
Yes, I think we should. So your questions then to the British triumvirate in Champ Car World Series next week on Midweek Motorsport. We are desperately trying to get Dario Franchitti as well.
And he keeps flying away from us.
Stop. That's not... And nothing about the Flying Scotsman and pilot's licences either. Aerobatics, no. Not funny, okay? He's travelling this week. We will try and get a hold of him. If it's not next week, it'll be the week after. Your questions, please, to that bunch of drivers. And I think we can call them a bunch. Is there a... What's the collective
grid.
Noun?
It's a grid.
Do you think?
A grid of drivers, yes.
All right.
That's a collective term.
Do you think?
Mm.
A grid of drivers. All right. That
while they talk amongst themselves, I'll say goodbye from John, Nick, Declan and myself, and we'll see you next week.